Jesse, you asked me if I was in the meth business or the money business. Neither. I'm in the empire business.
Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 130 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Gemma.
And I'm Mark.
And as you can see, normal service is resumed. None of this skip flip bullshit.
Nah.
We're back where we belong.
Can you imagine?
It feels right, doesn't it, now? Back where we belong, like you said. I like it. It feels right.
It feels like putting on an old comfortable sweater.
Yes.
Yeah, or a pair of pants with holes in them.
Yes, exactly that. Just but it's me. Also, it is winter and it's the right time to invest in a nice jumper, I think.
Yeah, and a pair of pants.
And where would you buy those from, Mark, if you wanted to buy a nice jumper?
I was going
to
say Primark, but I don't want to get endorsed by £6 jumpers. So something like, what's really expensive jumpers?
Marks and Spencer.
Yeah.
Synergy.
Yeah, they're good. And they make good presents for like family and stuff. Mm. Everyone loves a jumper.
Oh yeah, and like it's socks.
Yeah.
A tea towel.
I wish I hadn't mentioned jumpers now.
Sorry. We get a plethora of jumpers in the next episode.
Let's get off this and tell the people what's coming up on today's episode.
Well, our topic is the top three. Get ready for it. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Boring films of all time.
Ooh. That could be fun, though.
I think it's going to be nice, because we like a good rant here at Skip the End. And it's been about a couple of episodes since we've had a rant, so bring it on.
Yeah. Well, our main review, we didn't go to the cinema this time around. We watched it in the comfort of our own homes. We're going to be reviewing El Camino, a Breaking Bad film.
Oh, God.
I am tremendously excited for all that.
I might be too.
And our rewatch this time around is a biggie, a massive Oscar player back in the day. It's Russell Crowe in Gladiator.
Whoa.
That's going to be good.
It's another one of those that I'm amazed it's taken us 5.5 years to get to.
Christ, 5.5 years.
5.5 years.
Too long. Movie Masturbate this time around is over Danny Boyle. And I didn't realise how much of a vast array of films he has done. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really exciting. I genuinely have no idea what you guys are going to pick. Yeah. So bring that on.
Well, stick around. Talking of sticking around, we're going to be playing our third and final round of yet another wildly popular Skip to the End game, Who Dares Wins, which is in no way, shape, or form a copy of Who Dares Wins.
And it's on a knife edge, isn't it? Because it's me playing Mark, and whoever wins the whole shebang.
Yeah. The belt, man.
Win it all. But who's going to win? Find out.
And we'll, of course, have all the other usual goodies you're used to from the Skip to the End podcast. We'll give away some incredible prizes, and we'll give you our pop culture recommendations of the week. Before we get into the show, though, Mark, I can see something poking out of your bag there.
My sack.
Something shiny's poking out of your sack.
Well, you know our good friends, the one, the only, the Lime Bay Winery.
Yes.
Hey. We're just talking about how it's winter, you need a nice jumper, but also it's the sort of time for some sparkling mead, which they've just released.
Always.
Definitely think Always. That's good. This is like Ben's heaven. I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also got some cider and mead blended together.
Ooh.
Sizer.
Oh, it tastes sensation.
Let's try this. What do we all think? Is it nice?
Oh, delightful.
Is that nice?
Delightful.
Oh, smell that honey. Get your nose right in there.
Is that like winter in a can?
No.
No,
but it's good.
Stop trying to invent slogans. Jimmy can come up with his own slogans,
yeah.
Mark.
Yes.
But it smells like a good time.
Okay, that'll do it. But yeah, I think it's not an out of context plug or anything. I know you like that. So yeah, keep the ciders coming. If brothers, you're listening, you've got competition now, so send us twice as much and then we'll plug you on the next episode.
Yes, please. And enough of this bullshit. Let's get started.
Let's start with some tough love, all right? Ready for this? Here goes.
So to kick things off, this is a big one. It's our top three most boring films in cinema history. And again, like 130 episodes down, I'm surprised we haven't mentioned this. Because, you know, I like a good rant.
Who doesn't?
So let's kick the rant off. Ben, give me your first one.
It's Knight of Cups.
I've got it too. Yes!
Now, honestly, we probably could have picked any Terrence Malick film from the last 15 years, but this one takes the fucking prize, doesn't it?
All day long.
If you like to watch Christian Bale and Natalie Portman silently staring off into middle distance, this is the film for you.
Tick!
If you like pretentious bullshit with no entertainment value whatsoever, this is the film for you.
What?
Nothing happens.
No.
Nothing. I can't even give you a plot summary because I'm not entirely sure there was one. Mark, was there a plot?
Well, I actually wrote it down off IMDb, which I've never done before.
You didn't.
But listen to this, right? This is to try and sell the film.
Right.
A writer indulges in all of LA and Vegas and everything that it offers. Don't remember any of that.
Get ready.
And searches for love in a series of adventures with different women. I didn't see any of that.
No, I don't remember that happening.
Christian Bale was walking around as if he'd like lost. Oh no, he was actually looking around like he didn't have an iPhone, but he still wanted to play Pokemon Go.
Mm-hmm.
He was just walking around, faintly looking around. I think it's one of the worst films we've ever reviewed on this podcast.
I agree with you entirely. It's literally the most boring thing I've ever seen. And I don't mean the most boring film. I mean the most boring thing of a thing in the course of all human history.
Wow.
Reading poetry is more entertaining than this. Listening to Coldplay B-sides is more entertaining than this.
Hey, Benny, you'll have something to say about that.
Watching fucking snooker is more entertaining than this.
Nice.
It's atrocious. And at this point, I'm starting to think that Malick is just taking the piss. I think he's just trolling people.
Yeah.
I think Malick's like, yeah, I'm the guy who made The Thin Red Line, so I can clearly make great movies. But now I'm going to make unwatchable shit to see how many arty-farty reviewers will bang on about how fucking highbrow and arty it is. I think that's what he's doing. And if he is, good on him, because he's a millionaire and I'm the mug who's watching the films.
Yeah.
So who wins?
The scary thing is, I was looking on IMDb at the reviews, and everyone is slagging it off. There's hardly anyone. But you know the most, like, helpful comment where people always like it?
Oh, yeah,
the
yeah.
most viewed one is, the review simply says, a true poem. And I was like, fuck
I'm
going
to be sick in my actual mouth.
Do you know what I mean? Oh, it's horrendous. I'm glad we both got it. So yeah. A double impact on this piece of shite.
See, Gem, I think we reviewed this before you joined.
It was.
Is that right?
Skip to the MBG.
Yes, BG. Did you ever actually watch the film?
No.
Lucky you.
I took your advice. It's like I've never watched Grimsby because I don't watch it, so you had to in the past.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for taking one for the team.
A great start.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Oh, I think I might be able to top that. The Witch.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's controversial. A lot of people love this film.
No, I don't. I think it's toss. It's about a family in 1630s New England who experience the cruelty of witchcraft, black magic and possession. And it stars Anya Taylor-Joy and Finchie from The Office.
Finchie? Oh, that's all right.
It's not, that's his actual real name.
While you're down there, love.
Yeah.
What?
Bloody good rep.
Up the bum, no arm done.
Reads a book a week. But I bloody love a horror film, you know this, and witch stories in particular, because they're pretty darn cool. So you can imagine 2015 Gemma getting really pumped about this film. So much so, I told my significant other Greg and a lot of my best friends, say, come on guys, we gotta get some tickets. This is gonna be the real shit of 2015. We have to go. And it was supposed to be really scary, really mysterious. It was gonna be as scary as The Exorcist. So they bought my big talk. They didn't rent. They didn't do anything like that. They bought a mortgage and they took tickets from me. So we go to the cinema, you know, anticipation is really there. And we watch and it begins and it goes on and on and on. And yeah, it goes on.
Like your description.
Yeah. 8 days later, It finally finished. And I was embarrassed, so much so, when the credits came up, I could hear my mates going, what the fuck was that? And I had to issue a formal apology. I did the whole YouTube thing, you know, I put tears on. It was all scripted and everything. I felt so bad. I'm amazed that A, I have friends, and B, someone really wants to marry me after seeing that atrocious pile of wank.
It, you know, just to go off on a slight tangent, it is mortifying when you convince a friend to watch something, be it a TV show or a film, and you're like, this is amazing, you have to watch this, it's going to be great, and then they hate it or they're bored by it. I remember persuading my friend to watch Zodiac, a film that we all love.
It's
we all know it's a great film. And he fell asleep. He was bored to tears because it is a slow, ponderous film.
Yeah.
So I kind of get it, but it breaks your heart when you really love something and people aren't on board with it
as
much as you.
I mean, I had more fun at a pap smear.
Brutal. But the director of this film, I think his name's Robert Eggers.
Yep.
He's very highly rated. He's got a new film that's just come out called The Lighthouse.
And I really want to see
with
that.
Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, I'm worried that that might have witch syndrome.
But I think he's kind of like, you know that Ari Aster who did Hereditary and what was the most recent one?
Midsommar.
I think he's like one of those guys who a certain type of people will love their work, whereas a lot of other people think it's wank.
Funny you should say that because I think they're part of A24.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to be quite, you know, hip and highbrow. It's supposed to be the cool new film studio. And it's producing more misses than swings at the moment.
But they're doing well, though. Everyone, even though Hereditary is wank and Midsommar's wank, they actually do really well at the box office.
Yeah.
Everybody loves them. Yeah. A lot of people online love those films.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will watch The Lighthouse because I think it's got the potential to be pretty good.
I might watch Midsommar just so I can say I've seen it.
Yeah.
Because it's out on DVD now, so I might just buy it and watch it and then
please,
throw it away.
If you watch it, please show me the picture of yourself after the credits go, because pretty sure you're going to look confused. You look like a Christian Bale and Terrence Malick film.
There it is. That's a great start. And it's back to you already, Ben, because we're a duplicate.
Yes, and I think this might be a bit of a controversial one because it was a critical smash and it won Best Picture at the Oscars, but it bored my tits off. 12 Years a Slave.
Oh my goodness, really?
Yeah, I mean, I get that it's an important film and a powerful film. It reflects on a shameful and painful time in history, but that doesn't make it entertaining.
No.
It's just misery porn. I can take no entertainment from watching slaves get whipped and beaten for 2 hours. It just makes my brain switch off. And I know it's based on a true story, but give me fictional nonsense like Django fucking up Whitey and blowing up plantations.
Yeah.
Mm. That's the kind of slave shit I want to watch.
Yeah, exactly.
If I have to watch slave
shit. Top three slave films.
Oh, on Django.
Next topic.
Yeah. But it's one of those films that we're supposed to like, we have to like, just because the subject matter. Films about slavery, the Holocaust, people with weird diseases, all that sort of stuff. The standard Oscar-baity stuff.
I was going to say, if that's not going to win an Oscar, that's the tick list, all
exactly,
of them.
Exactly, exactly. That's the sort of stuff that we're supposed to like, and I can appreciate it on an artistic level, but I just didn't find it entertaining. It's very well made.
Yeah.
We've all seen the film, haven't we?
Absolutely.
It's very well made, undoubtedly superbly acted, but it just doesn't engage me.
No.
You know, and could you ever imagine yourself watching this film a second time?
No, why would you?
No, whereas I've watched Die Hard 70 times.
Exactly.
So, you know.
Because you've had a lot of Christmases. But yeah. I've seen 12 Years a Slave, but truthfully, I fell asleep watching it and it was just boring. Mm-hmm. Nothing was happening. Mm-hmm. I thought Brad Pitt looked like he couldn't be asked to be on set. It just looks shit. Didn't he produce it? Is that why he got
did,
involved?
Yeah.
So he had to be there as well. But rubbish.
I completely disagree with you both. I love this film.
Oh,
Steve
God.
McQueen. No, Steve McQueen is such a visionary. Everything he does takes time and everything has a meticulous meaning to it. And Lupita Nyong'o too is just the one for me.
But as I say, I agree with everything you've just said there. Yeah. I mean, I think Lupita Nyong'o is a great actress. Yeah. I think Steve McQueen's a great visual director. So as I said, I can appreciate it artistically.
Yeah.
But that still doesn't make it entertaining
it's
or engaging.
Fair enough.
It bored me to tears.
And you'll never watch it again?
Never. Not in this lifetime.
Good. Come on then, Gemma, it's you again.
Okay, now it's a film that nobody's really heard, but oh my God, I was literally like weeping because I wanted it to end. No, it's not my first period. It's Final Fantasy, The Spirit Within. Has anybody heard of it?
Hold on, there's a lot of period and pap smear type content today, isn't there, Gemma? Is it that time of the month?
Jesus. Sponsored
welcome
by Tampax.
Welcome to my femininity. It's an animated film with the vocal stylings of Alec Baldwin, Steve Buscemi, and Donald Sutherland.
So that's good.
They're quite big, heavy hitters. And of course, it's in the vein of the popular gaming series. Now, if I can try and wrap my head around the plot, because I've got to remember that bad time. A scientist decides to make a last stand on Earth with the help of a bunch of soldiers against an invasion of alien phantoms. I mean, sorry, I literally just bored myself to death saying that. I didn't watch this off my own back, I just want to say. So, controversy corner. I don't give a shit about Final Fantasy games. I really don't give a monkey's about them.
Me neither.
And a few years ago, me and a bunch of friends, we decided to do a movie night. So we'd go to each other's house and we wouldn't tell each other what we were going to watch. We just press play and a film would go on. FYI, I chose Blade.
Nice.
Good work.
Good choice.
Thank you very much. It still upholds even to this day. And one of our friends decided, okay, well, I'm going to show a film. I think they're going to really, really love us. And he pressed play and then this film played. And you know you're in trouble when at the 10-minute mark, everybody in the room is clocking each other, just laughing, going, this is shit. it.
Did he love it? Was he like, I got the game, I played it, Mark, it's amazing.
Mark, it's his jam, seriously. This is his absolute jam. And we all tried really hard not to laugh. We tried not to make a big deal of it. I think at one point, we started a WhatsApp group just to try and make the time go
Christ.
By. And this went on for 1 hour and 46 minutes.
Oh, too long.
1 hour and 46 motherfucking minutes.
You'll never get that time back.
No.
Like our listeners.
Honestly, I genuinely can't tell you the best bit, like our listeners. I really can't tell you what the fuck happened. I mean,
it sounds wank.
It's really, really toss. And it's a film that would make watching paint dry seem like parkouring on a crane.
Nice.
Parkour, parkour! But there was nothing of this.
Wow.
I've never seen it. I don't think I've even existed, frankly.
No. There's a few different ones, I think, isn't there?
I don't know. Is there?
I think so, for the game. I don't know. I've always seen different...
If you'd like to get in touch.
Isn't the one when it came out, everyone was jizzing over how great the hair movement was and stuff? It was like, I think they'd use new forms of computer-generated graphics or something to make the hair look great.
Are you kidding me? My nephew could draw better shit than that.
Oh.
And he's 5.
Wow. Shout out to your nephew.
Taylor!
Wow. I'm going to save you.
Thank you.
You've both seen this film.
Go on.
It's so fucking boring.
Here we go.
50 Shades of Grey.
Cack.
Right. We're not just picking on this film because it's shit. We're picking on it because nothing really happens.
Mm-hmm.
We actually went to the cinema and it was one of our most downloaded episodes. And fair play to us. We went. We did it. It was funny at the time.
Hold on. Let's have this right. Adam and I at the time specifically chose not to see it. We didn't want to review this, and you used your veto power to insist that we did. So you can sit here and talk about how shit it is. You forced us to go and watch it.
What was the backup choice?
It was probably something all right.
Yeah,
but,
probably.
Yeah.
Oh dear.
But we went to the cinema and we had these, it was full of women, wasn't it? Every single seat had
women
a woman
are
in
dirty.
It. Loads
Wet.
Of them. It was grim. And everyone was talking about how big the book was and how successful it was and how great and all these mothers were getting back into having horny time in bed and stuff like that because of it.
Mothers!
Horny time.
Well, yeah.
Take
and
a pic.
I'm sure a lot of babies were, you know, 9 months after this release were born, but they had this film where it's supposed to be all raunchy and dirty and, you know, all about this kinky sex and tying each other up, and nothing happened. It was really boring. She goes and works for him. Their chemistry is the worst I've ever seen, and I was sat there bored. And we joke, and I was like, I'll get to the raunchy bit. It just didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
It was mild, boring, lots of looking into each other's eyes. Oh, should he really take me or not?
One eye or two?
None of that. If that had happened, I'd have been like, all right, at least there's a bit of, you know, bit of blue.
But there wasn't. Blue foot dance.
But there wasn't. There was nothing happened. At one point, I think she went into this room and it had like a handcuffs on the wall. And it's like, oh my God, he's so adventurous. He's so raunchy. Terrible. Then you throw in Ellie Goulding singing over the top. And I wanted to kill myself.
Mm-hmm.
It was horrendous. We couldn't even laugh at it. We just had to laugh. It was shit.
For a film that sells itself on its sex, it had surprisingly little sex in it.
Yeah.
It wasn't sexy, it wasn't raunchy, it wasn't filthy, it was just dull.
Yeah, what's the main guy called? Jamie
Dornan.
Yeah, he looked bored.
He's
really fucking bored.
Jamie Doorknob.
Yeah, the standard of jokes today is killing it. But
thank
you. He looked bored. He obviously got a lot of money. I don't think he did the sequels, did he? I think he just quit.
Did he?
Hell. What about she didn't? I'm sure they both didn't.
I'm pretty sure they both did.
No, fuck it.
Right from the end. Yeah. They were contractually obliged.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But it's fucking boring, isn't it?
Horrendously bad. Just thinking about it now is sending me off.
Have you ever watched the sequels?
No.
Imagine the second one's absolute filth with absolute gangbanging and everything. It's like, you needed to get past the first book and then it all kicks off like Harry Potter.
Yeah, the payoff's well worth it.
The gangbangs in Harry Potter weren't so good though.
No.
Not as great.
It's funny you mentioned 50 Shades of Grey.
Oh.
Because I've got 50 Shades Darker.
Oh Lord.
Yep.
Fuck's
the
sake.
Second film in the 50 Shades trilogy, and that's right. I've seen the second film.
Christ.
And it certainly was 50 Shades Darker than the first one because it was shit-coloured.
Nice.
Of course, this was, as the first one was, marketed to all the ladies in the house because women are dirty. And it was showcased as a big girls' night out or in a film to live out your deepest desires and fantasies. But I'm sorry, but I'd rather take the bins out. Thank you very much. And Mark, you commented about the chemistry between Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan. It's like putting peanut butter and metal shavings into a sandwich and biting onto it hard. Doesn't go, does it?
No.
Mm-mm. Jamie Dornan pretty much looks like he couldn't get an erection at a Pornhub convention. And Dakota Johnson...
Do they have Pornhub conventions? Because if so, sign me up.
Yeah. We're not going to Comic-Con this year. Yeah. We're going to Pornhub Con.
That's Pornhub.
Fake Taxi Con. That'd be cool.
Very specific.
Yes. I like it. I like it. There's something about it I like, because obviously it's stage, but for something, I don't know.
I don't know what you're referring to, Mark.
No, what I like have it. I created?
I've never seen pornography.
No, nor me. It's degrading to women.
Which what? I hate.
Which Ben does hate. If anyone hates women, I don't know.
Oh,
women.
Oh really? No, it's Ben. Anyone,
how can I hate women? My mom's one.
No, so. If anyone hates derogatory filming of women, women should not be punished
what
for having big
boobs.
What are
you on about?
If anything, they should.
Let's get back to the topic
all
in hand.
All women
let's
are
get,
equal.
Let's get back to the topic in hand.
Yes, of course.
Boffing. The boffing between
nose.
You
can't say boff after telling me off.
What?
It's fucking hell.
I could say something really explicit.
Honestly, you don't need to sum up this film. That's okay. Done. It's yeah. Shit.
But I would rather, you know, it's about as erotic as being rubbed down with a rubber chicken. And that is pretty hot.
Type that into Pornhub.
Yeah. When watching this film, I was clock watching, not cock watching.
Hey.
Thank you.
That's it. Go good out night. On that. Just drop the mic.
Play me off, boys. Play me off.
Right then, Ben. Next to you.
Only God forgives.
Oh, and he didn't, and he wouldn't forgive this shit.
No.
How do you pair the tremendously talented Nicholas Winding Refn and Ryan Gosling, red hot off the back of the brilliant Drive, and deliver one of the most tedious up its own arse films
of
this millennium? So in the film, Gosling plays this boxing club owner with an Oedipal complex whose mum orders him to avenge his brother's death. And that actually sounds pretty cool
that
on
sounds
paper.
Great. Yeah,
that sounds pretty ace, yep. Man. But it's awful in practice. Gosling just spends most of the film wandering around in a daze. The film spends essentially 90 minutes just staring at Gosling's face as he does practically nothing, which may be enough for some people. Mark, I imagine you would get a kick out
of
that.
Yeah, massively.
But for people who actually enjoy being entertained in cinema, it's not enough. And other than a few scenes of explosive violence, almost nothing happens, and there's almost no dialogue. I looked this up. Gosling's character only has 17 lines
fucking
in the entire
hell.
Film.
What?
And he's the main character.
Ridiculous.
An example of just how painfully boring the film is as well. It contains a scene where Refn just shows some old Thai bloke doing karaoke for 5 minutes. It's not in context. There's not any dramatic purpose for this. It's just for the sake of showing it.
Why do I want to see this?
It's don't.
Have you not seen Only God Forgives?
I've seen probably about the first 20 minutes, and that was enough for me.
Yeah, it is absolutely enough. And it also has one of the most absurd, on-the-nose, obvious scenes in the history of cinema. So Julian, Gosling's character, as I say, he has an Oedipal complex. And there's a bit where his mum, spoiler alert for this film, none of you should ever want to see. His mum is dead on the floor, and she's got a wound in her gut. So he puts his hand into her gut to basically put himself back into her womb. And it's like, oh, God, we get it, man. You've got mummy issues.
Oh, my God.
You fucking prick. we don't need dumbass literal visuals like that to prove it. And that is basically the most exciting thing that happens in the whole film.
Oh, crap. Womb Raider.
It see, isn't... if they're doing that in 50 Shades of Grey, you know what I mean? Yeah. That's what I want.
But Ellie Goulding in the background?
It's an abomination, isn't it, Mark?
Awful. And like you said, it was off the back of Drive.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone's like, this is going to be incredible. The cover looks awesome. The trailer looked amazing, all really colourful and really like, oh, look at the cinematography, look at it. Ryan Gosling can do no wrong. He did this time. Mm-hmm. Like, he looked all right for the 11 lines or whatever he had, 17 lines. He did all right. He just, what can you do with that shitty script? Hey, what can you do with that film?
Tell you what you can do. Be shocked, because he's been in a Terrence Malick film too.
Oh, fucking hell.
A film called Song to Song. That didn't get rated highly either.
But it's the director as well, Refn. He's just disappeared up his own arse in 3 years, because he was the one who did that Amazon series not so long ago with Miles Teller, wasn't he? I watched the first 10 minutes and had to turn it off because it was abysmal.
God, I do not like Miles Teller.
No, neither do I.
What's he done wrong?
He's just a jumped up little prick.
Yeah.
I like to be in Whiplash.
Have you never heard him in an interview?
Yeah.
Never.
He's a smug up his own twat.
Oh, yeah. That's a shame.
Yeah.
It's like next.
Is that why he's not working anymore? No one ever sees him in stuff like Independence Day 2 or whatever he's done.
Oh, God.
No, he did Fantastic Four, didn't he?
Yeah.
Shite.
That was an abortion of a film, wasn't it? Well,
I'm sorry we'd let the spirits drop today. It's a lot of moaning.
I think you can tell that we're recording on a Monday after work. Rather than on a Sunday like
we're
normally
so
do.
We're so pissed off.
Yeah, he's a right twat.
I like him in Whiplash, though, so that's all right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I just don't like him in life.
Yeah. Okay. So, Only God Forgives.
Yeah.
Check that film out now. Available from all good DVD and Blu-ray outshots. Right, I've got a controversial one.
Yeah.
Really controversial, where I think Gemma might flip the table.
Right, I know what he's going to say.
No, don't worry, it's not The Shining. That would that'd be mad.
It's going to be my choice, too.
2001 A Space Odyssey.
What? Yeah.
Yes.
Whoa!
I did warn you.
Oh, hold on, sorry. I must have misheard that,
yes.
Gemma. I can't possibly have heard what I thought I heard, because if I did, this podcast is donezo.
Yeah.
We're out.
Oh.
Say it again, please.
2001 A Space Odyssey.
You're a fucking mug.
Ben, grab the table.
Yes. So for me, it is an absolute masterpiece of cinematography.
Oh,
it looks
God.
Great. The shots are all beautiful, but it's boring as fuck, man. Like, listen to this, right? I get it. Stuff can float in space, but we don't
well,
need
that's 20, the laws of gravity.
We don't need 20 minutes of just seeing these long shots that go on and on. The film starts with a black screen for 2 minutes before the music even comes in. Why do we need to see a blank screen? For fuck's sake. You don't have to push the fast forward button.
Speaking
it's
in
too
the
long.
Universe, mate.
11 minutes of grunting monkeys. I'm not interested.
Well,
if I
want to
see grunting monkeys, I watch Planet of the Apes because they're fucking got guns and attacking each other. And then the space stuff. Yawn, yawn, yawn.
I'm getting physically angry.
I get it. It's a masterpiece. I understand why people appreciate it. It's not for me. It's boring. It's so long.
Now, Gemma,
yes.
I need to introduce a fact into this situation because Mark's just spewing absolute bullshit.
I love facts.
As we've sat here, as Mark has been droning on there, I've just looked up our records for Skip to the End. We of course, rewatched 2001 Space Odyssey. Gemma, what score do you think Mark gave this film that he said is boring and not for him? What do you think he gave it? I'd imagine maybe a 2 or 3 based on that.
I would say at least one, maybe a 0.
Oh, maybe
kick.
A 0. He gave it a 10.
What?
He gave it a fucking 10, and he's had the nerve to say it's not for me.
Did I give it a 10?
He gave it a 10. Well, I gave it a 9.
Wow.
You and Gemma gave it 10.
Oh,
that's incredible.
Mug. Good things can be boring. Fucking 10.
Fucking 10.
I'm a mug.
You are.
But
like,
hey,
you've a handle on the side of your head. I'm going to drink you in a minute.
It's woke us up, hasn't it? Do you know what I mean? Do you not agree? It is a bit long.
It's amazing.
No, it's a masterpiece.
It's boring.
Fucking hell.
It's boring. I want people now to be ranting online. Ben's has made me
seriously,
look a right
hold me back.
10. But yeah, I must have thought it was something else, like Interstellar. But yeah, I give it the credit for 1968. But man, it's way too long and it's a yawn fest. Wank.
10 out of 10.
2 out of 10. I've changed it.
What's
I said
the next
2.
Rewatch?
He's updated the website. I said 2. And what he's done is he's mugged me off. Not happy. Rubbish.
Well, I'm pretty sure people could go back and listen to the episode to prove that that's not true.
Oh my God, it's the greatest film I've ever seen, and I've only seen it once. 10 out of 10.
I guarantee Gemma would have called it a masterpiece.
Of course he would. Iconic.
Iconic, he'd have said.
Definitely. Stanley Kubrick, best director ever.
Boring. So, yeah.
Jesus.
What have we got from social media?
So glad you asked. We're going to go to Twitter first, and there's a few controversial options here. The Antichrist at Jill Nerd, great name. Fantasia.
Ooh, the Disney one.
Yeah.
Not much happens.
I'm going to have to agree.
A bit trippy, that is.
Yeah. And massively racist. Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Ben's on board.
And La La Land.
Yes.
No way.
Definitely.
Do you know what he called it? Blah Blah Land.
Brilliant. Nailed it.
10 out of 10. Next. JK at Egg Chasing Coach said Gangs of New York.
No, that's a great film.
Doctor Strange.
That is a strange choice.
He's
I like
strange.
That film.
Mm, me too.
The visuals are incredible.
Yeah.
They are. Oh, 2 out of 10, eh?
Not as good as 2001 Space Odyssey, but you know.
And they also said Meet Joe Black.
He does walk around eating peanut butter for 3 hours, but Anthony Hopkins is great in that film.
Put that on the poster.
Done.
Jay Ridgway at Jay Ridgway 23 said Interstellar.
Yes.
Mm. Oh, that's the space one. There not 2001.
There it is. Masterpiece. Room. Not The Room, but Brie Larson Room.
You've got to have patience. I understand why.
Exactly. I love that film, but I get why someone wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, Churchill. So it's not the Darkest Hour one. It's the other one.
Oh.
No, I didn't see that.
The other what?
No, neither did I. Never mind. Stephen White at Gaia Theory said, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Get fucked.
That film absolutely blows up halfway through. Yeah. And you can never be bored with a flamethrower.
No.
Superb.
Also said The Neon Demon.
Yeah, that is wank.
Is that Nicholas Winding Refn
yes,
as well?
Yes, it
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Is it Dakota Fanning just walking around like, oh my God.
It's just
might
weird,
be a sister.
Isn't it?
One of them is shit.
It's just a person in the end. And Indiana Jones, any of them.
Wow.
Yeah, I must say, when I first watched the first one not that long ago, I thought it was boring.
Wow.
I get that.
We're
going
to lose a lot of
stuff
this week.
Thank you for listening.
Yeah, cheers for sticking with us till now. But
we're going to go over to Facebook. So Tom Langley said, Citizen Kane.
I've never seen it.
No,
that's
what
should
inspired
have,
the room.
Yeah.
I have.
And is it boring?
It's quite long.
Yeah, fuck that.
Never mind. He also said, The Tree of Life.
Yes.
Yeah, wank.
And I can't believe I'm saying this. 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Yes!
That's
ridiculous.
No. One of us. One of us. 10 out of 10. Masterpiece. <Yeah. laughs> Fucking Ted.
It's a shame, dear listeners, that you couldn't see the dance moves that Mark was busting.
They're really good.
Well, I mean, that's one way to describe it. Dave Fox said, "I am legend."
That film's all right for a Will Smith film.
Yeah, yeah. It's him and the dog.
Also said, "Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy."
No, I love that film.
I love that film too. You're talking bollocks. And finally, Spectre.
The James Bond film.
Yeah.
That's not the Skyfall one, which is quite good. Spectre's quite shit. David Knapp said, "Duel."
The David Lynch film?
Yeah.
Ooh, interesting.
Also said, "Star Trek." Didn't specify which one, but yeah, it's not really my bag either, to be honest. And Apocalypse Now.
Ridiculous.
What the fuck?
Get Out Now, more like.
Did you say Duel or June?
Duel.
Duel, the Spielberg one.
Yeah, that might be all right.
Oh, right, okay.
Like a lorry after people before Jaws. That sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Could do. Then finally, we're going to go over to Instagram. We've got Dave Walsh at DWalsh1986 said, "Cloud Atlas." Boring. Also said, "Divergent." With Hayley, no, it's not Hayley Steinfeld. It's the other one that I can't. Shailene Woodley.
Yeah.
There we go.
I like her.
She's all right.
So I'll let you know.
Cheers.
Thank you. Thank you for your input. And also said, "Yes, man."
No, man. No,
exactly. Wank. Then finally, we've got Jack Turner at TurnerJack97 said, I can't wait to announce this, "Yoga Hosers."
Yep.
"Jaws."
Freaking idiot.
"And Blade Runner."
Ridiculous. He's trolling us. He doesn't believe any of that. He's trolling us big time.
No.
I'm not having that.
Do you know, right, genuinely, one of the most popular choices on social media was Blade Runner. There was pages of people saying it, and I saw people going, "You're fucking mental. How dare you?" And people were fighting in between themselves on the thread, and I was like, Ben is going to flip a table.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
No, I mean, it is an acquired taste. It's never going to be everyone's favourite movie. It's the greatest movie ever made, and I will physically fight anyone who disagrees.
Yeah.
But I can understand people who don't love it as much as I do.
Yeah.
As wrong mentally as they must be.
Brilliant.
Well, thank you, everybody. And as always, keep them coming in.
Whose topic choice is it next?
It is mine. We are living in a crazy old climate of politics and climate change and all sorts of craziness that just doesn't make you want to watch the TV or anything like that. So therefore, I think we need a little bit of a laugh. We need a little bit of reality. Our next topic is our top three satirical movies.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, bitch! Magnets! Oh!
Our main review is El Camino, directed by Vince Gilligan and starring Aaron Paul, Jesse Plemons and Robert Forster. Following on from the events of the season finale of Breaking Bad, we follow Jesse Pinkman. After being incarcerated by a neo-Nazi gang, he has escaped and finds himself on the run due to a massive police manhunt. His plan involves getting out of Albuquerque and starting a new life in Alaska, but he's going to need to get a ton of money and dispose of some nasty bastards wanting the cash for themselves. If you notice, I didn't say we'd been to our latest cinema.
No.
Because we didn't.
I like that.
We got comfortable, we got on our old pants, and we watched it on Netflix, which is still available to watch right now.
Are you dropping hints about what you want for Christmas? Because you keep talking about your old pants.
Yeah.
Pants,
all
no.
All the time.
You need to sort your life out.
I know.
Well, I mean, is it a crime to enjoy a comfortable pair of pants?
No.
Because if so, arrest me, officer.
Spoiler warning for anyone that hasn't seen this film as well.
Yeah, you might want to skip to this bit and come back to us later when you can hear our thoughts and you can agree and then you can talk amongst yourselves, which is all very nice. So I'm going to throw this over to Mark first. El Camino or El Camino, no, you better don't.
Terrible.
What? No, you better don't.
Terrible.
That's right.
Grammatically incorrect.
Fucking dreadful.
No, it's not.
That's
it's
not
a masterpiece.
My review of this,
it's a masterpiece.
Yes. Okay.
Extraordinary.
Do you want to do another one or do you want to stick with that?
El Camino or El Camino, yeah.
That's better.
See, that works.
Or Hell Camino.
No.
Brilliant.
Okay, but anyway, this is for me the love letter from Vince to Jesse. I think it was a perfect send-off. It was really good. I really enjoyed it, but it was never needed in my opinion. And I had the perfect wrap-up at the end of Series 5 of Breaking Bad. So it's great, but I could have lived without it.
Okay. Ben, Jesse Pinkman or Jesse Stinkman?
That's good.
I like that
That's
one.
That's really good.
That's better.
Thanks for having me.
Redeemed yourself partially.
You should have said Walter White or Walter Scheidt. That's better.
That's good. That is good.
Don't encourage him.
So Breaking Bad is my favourite show of all time. And Better Call Saul isn't far off, to be honest. So I was always going to like this. Clearly, it's been designed for fans of the show. If you're not familiar with the show, then I don't know how much enjoyment you would get out of this movie. But that's intentional. It's fan service. We get a relatively happy ending for Jesse. We get cameos from some of our favourites, which we'll discuss later. So as a fan, I was well and truly serviced. As Mark said, was it necessary? No. But was it good fun? Hell yeah. Loved it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to echo exactly what you guys have said. I don't think we ever needed any additional story to what happened in the season finale. I thought that maybe it was going to be cameo, 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 but actually it was an utter delight. Kudos on the cinematography too. I think it's one of the most beautiful things on Netflix right now, mm-hmm. but I enjoyed it. And hey, I love seeing Jesse Pinkman and our favourite characters again.
You're absolutely right on the look of it, the cinematography and the direction. Even though it's fairly small scale and has a relatively modest budget compared to big screen movies, it looks far more cinematic than the show ever did. I think it looks a little glossier, a little pricier. I think it looks gorgeous. I mean, the cinematography on the show historically has always been great.
Yeah.
But I thought this looked beautiful.
Yeah.
If you remember the last season, that was very filmy. It was very glossy. It was very, you could imagine those kind of episodes, especially like Ozymandias on the big screen. And it was just so lovely to see that every value that Breaking Bad had held hadn't been lost in this film. There's a beautiful shot, I think, when the police are starting to drive off on the road and it's done as a bird's eye view. And it's breathtaking to watch. It really is just something else.
It made me want to watch Breaking Bad again.
Oh, me too.
And just reminded me why I love Vince so much. And it is fucking brilliant, isn't it? You just want to go back and watch it all. And Netflix did this like little recap before the first time you watch it. It was about a 3-minute video. Yeah. And I was just sitting there going, oh, have I got time to watch Breaking Bad for the next few weeks and then watch this? But if we were reviewing it, I'd be watching it again now.
Alternatively, if you want to watch another recap, Google Aaron Paul on, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel, and he did us like a 2-minute recap of everything that happened.
Nice.
And it's Aaron Paul, mate. Speaking of which, Aaron fucking Paul, ladies and gentlemen.
It's an absolutely incredible performance from Aaron Paul. It's the best he's ever been.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not just in the Breaking Bad universe, but in anything I've ever seen him. And it's such an internal performance. You can feel his rage and his pain trapped inside just beneath the surface. There's very little action in the first half of the film, but it's all about watching Jesse. And we see how he copes with the indignities of captivity in the flashbacks. And then his PTSD in the current timeline. And it's incredible. It's absolutely amazing from Aaron Paul.
I think one of the best scenes of even this year, fuck it, I'll call it, is when you see him in the shower, he's trying to clean himself up and he gets the flashbacks of when he was incarcerated. And it's so moving, it's so powerful, and it really just stops you in your tracks. I don't think I've seen another person that I think we'll talk about in the future, but this particular scene, I think, is one of my favourite scenes I've seen all year. It's just one man in a shower and he just holds you in his palm. It's incredible.
I'd love that.
You say women are dirty. Boys.
You said one man in a shower holding you with his palm.
Yeah.
Come on. That's what he said. But
in Mark's defence, he couldn't not react to that.
Yes. And it's a hell of a good reminder of Jesse's transformation. That's why I like the flashbacks, how much he's grown.
But
The one problem I've got with Aaron Paul is he is Jesse, and he's always going to be Jesse. And when he goes to do stuff like Need for Speed, and I know we've got him coming up in Westworld, but any time I've seen him, he's never had a great career outside of Breaking Bad because he is just Jesse as the main character in life. And I think it's unfortunate because he's never been successful, has he, outside of it?
I must stop you right there. He is Todd in BoJack Horseman.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
And
voice
his vocal work
is fine.
It's marvellous.
It is, but when you say he is Jesse, I don't think there is one thing that Jesse is. And a perfect example of that is the flashback that we get at the end of the film, spoiler alert for this, is when we see Jesse with Walter White.
Yeah.
And it's a flashback to a scene that would have taken place, I think, in season 2.
Yeah.
And the Jesse we see then is a very, very different Jesse that we see now. The Jesse that we see then is when he was younger and immature, carefree. Compare that to the kind of haunted and broken Jesse we have now. They seem like two different people because of the shit that he's been through. And I think that demonstrates not only the path that character has taken, but it demonstrates Aaron Paul's range as well.
Also, the growth of the character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's remarkable to see the journey that Jesse actually went on. And I thought those time jumps didn't really detract anything away from the story. If anything, I thought it added gravitas.
Yeah.
I don't know, some of the pacing was a bit, for me, I was like jumping around quite a lot, and I was going, sitting there going, is this season two, or would it be series three, and what's this bit from,
see,
and where's he?
Mind.
It's fine, I think, I didn't like seeing Heisenberg back, because I was kind of, when Walter White's there, he hasn't shaved his head, obviously, because he didn't want to ruin stuff, and if you look up the makeup and stuff, he did look a bit shit. I was sitting there going, I know you've done it, it's great for you to come back, it's awesome, but you're blatantly wearing makeup and haven't got your head shaved, because if he had, everyone in the world would have gone, he's back in Breaking Bad film, but it did look a bit shit.
Wait, he looked a bit like he had like elephantitis or something. his head was massive because they had to squash his hair under that bald
cap. Shit,
like
man.
Pinky and the Brain.
But I didn't like that bit. It annoyed me.
I loved that cameo because I thought you can't have a Breaking Bad property without him being involved in it. And I thought it was lovely, not only seeing what Jesse used to be like, but just getting just one scene of their old dynamic.
Yeah.
Especially because that's at the point in the series where they weren't at each other's throats. It's when Walt thought that his death was imminent, so he was trying to be better to Jesse and he's trying to encourage him to go to college and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was lovely just to get a glimpse of that. I thought the opening scene where we see Mike, I thought that was unnecessary.
I didn't think that needed to be there.
No, all that was there for was to plant the idea of moving to Alaska, but anyone could have done that. It didn't need to be Mike. And seeing as Mike is one of the lead characters in Better Call Saul, it's not as if we've been missing him. He's there anyway. Mm-hmm. So that just felt like it was tacked on. That was too much fan service for me.
Yeah, but wasn't it lovely to see Skinny Pete and Badger actually get a little bit more fleshing out?
And not only fleshing out, proving to be the best friends a human could ever
have. Oh my God!
Honestly, I was welling up. I was like, I love those boys after what they did for Jesse.
You've always been a hero to
me. God, why'd you do this for me, Skinny Pete? Yeah,
I'll tell
you've
what,
always been my hero. I'm
Skinny
like,
Pete kicked me in the heart nuts.
But not just saying that, him coming up with the plan. You think Skinny Pete is a dipshit who doesn't know his ass from a hole in the ground, but within seconds he's come up with this whole plan of how he's going to get Jesse away. He's giving him the money, he's giving him the car.
Uh-huh.
He's a genius, and he's doing that just because he loves his mate. Yeah. Brilliant.
But I love them together, even when you first see them playing on the games console.
And
they're just trading little barbs.
About mum jokes and stuff.
I love it.
So good.
And speaking of additional cameos, obviously there was one particular character that got a little bit more of a cameo, and that was Todd. Creepy, cold, psychopathic Todd, played by Jesse Plemons. Now,
he hasn't aged very well, has he, really, in 6 years?
He's put on a bit of timber. Yeah.
That took me out of it, to be honest. Yeah. I was like, it probably took him out to bloody KFC. But honestly, when I was watching it, a lot of them have aged in 6 years.
Yeah.
He's the worst. And I was sitting there going, Jesus, like, he doesn't look anything like him anymore.
Yeah, but I agree with you. I thought that as well initially, but I was able to overlook it because it's such a great performance from Jesse
Plemons. He's an amazing actor, isn't
he? He's wonderful.
Fantastic. And I love the way that he makes Todd so normal, polite and boring, even though he's a fucking sociopath. He's a cold-hearted, evil son of a bitch, but he's the most polite, friendly, shake your hand, do you want a cup of tea type of guy.
And do you know what the worst thing is? He has the ability to try and appear empathic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really feel like he could care about somebody. So the desert scene in particular, they're
Christ,
just disposed.
That was amazing.
Again, a beautiful scene to watch, but overall I could watch that again and again. They've just buried the body of the housekeeper because she saw a book with some cash in, so she had to die. And Jesse decides to pluck up the courage and take the gun from the dashboard and hold it in his hand, and Todd just has this beautiful way, calmly just telling him to hand the gun over. And Jesse just doesn't have it within himself to pull the trigger and aim. It's heartbreaking, but at the same time, the power that Todd has, chills.
It's incredible. And to go back to the thing you were talking about there with the housekeeper, one of my favourite parts that really shows you everything you need to know about Todd is when Jesse finds one of those books with the money in, and Todd's telling him about the housekeeper, and Jesse said, oh, did she steal some of the money? He's like, no, she would never do that. She was lovely. It's like, you murdered her in cold blood. And he was so defensive of the fact that she might have stolen something. That's exactly who he is. He's a sociopath.
Yeah, because you have to remember, this was a guy that didn't have any apologies about shooting point blank Jesse's girlfriend in the face.
Christ.
You got to remember that. The guy was fucked up.
He was amazing. I think my favourite scene in the whole film, though, I would say, is the two-hander between Aaron Paul and Robert Forster in the vacuum store. It's just a brilliantly tense, superbly acted back and forth between the two, and quite funny as well.
Yeah.
You know that bit where Jesse's saying to him, you didn't call the police. There's no way you could have called the police because they would have called you back. Blah, blah, blah. And then the cop car turns up. I thought that was a great little comic turn.
Yeah.
And of course, it was all the more poignant knowing that Robert Forster died the same day the damn show came
out. That's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
But he was so, like, there was just some sort of majesty about him and his character. Again, like, appearing as normal as you like on the outside, like a bit of a granddad, but underneath the surface, he's cold. There's that calculation as well. He will do shit for a large sum of cash.
Yeah,
so sad, though. You'll never get to see all the reviews now, because everyone's raving about him.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking died the day.
On
but,
the day.
But think of the legacy he's just left.
Yeah.
is huge.
Absolutely. Another character I wanted to mention is the new villain that was introduced, the villainous welder, Neil Candy, played by Scott MacArthur. I thought he was ace. I really liked him. And I've seen Scott MacArthur in a few things before, but he's mainly a comedic actor, and I've always found him very funny. So it was kind of a bit of a shock to see him play in this villainous character. But I really enjoyed his work, especially that scene where Jesse goes to the place where he works, his welding, whatever, and him and his mates are there drinking and celebrating. And then it becomes a Wild West shootout with Sergio Leone close-ups on the eyes.
It's
and
brilliant.
Everything. I love that.
Were those guys linked to the original badasses that kidnapped him? I didn't know what the link was. Why they're there.
See, what they wanted to do is they wanted to... I'm reading into Vince Gilligan's mind here, but what I assume he wanted to do was have villains who were somehow linked back to the original story.
Yeah.
The problem is, Jesse and Walt killed all the Nazis.
Yeah.
So there were none of them left. They're all dead.
I didn't know if they were like linked family.
No,
yeah.
No, so what he did is he brought in the idea of this welder having been the one that created that rig that Jesse was stuck to in the show.
Yeah.
So we never met Neil in the show, but that's just a way of introducing him, as if to say he knew the Nazis, he knew what they were doing, he could have told the police that Jesse was here and he didn't help him. So it creates this new villain who's kinda connected to the old one. So I get why he's done that.
But remember that whole flashback scene when you see him rigged up and he's being forced to run as fast as he can just to be jerked back, and he's clearly, you know, happy with his work and needs to do this, that and the other. But you're right, tenuous link.
Yeah.
Very tenuous.
But I enjoyed his work. I thought he was very good. I want to talk now briefly, if we can, about Vince Gilligan. Now, of course, he's the creator of the show. He wrote this film. He directed it as well. I loved the direction. I thought there were some lovely shots in this film. Gemma, to go back to that scene you were talking about that you love of Aaron Paul in the shower.
Yeah.
That's brilliantly filmed. Even the steam. I love there's a bit where you just see the steam rising off Jesse's body. That's a gorgeous shot. And there's another shot as well when Jesse is in Todd's flat and he's trying to find the money and he's prying up the skirting board.
Yeah.
And there's a bit, as he's prying it, the camera starts to tilt.
It's
with
amazing.
And then my favourite shot, I think, in the whole thing is when he's completely gutted Todd's apartment and you see an aerial view of it and it looks like the game The Sims.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
There are so many beautiful little flourishes in there that I think Gilligan did a great job.
When he arrives at Alaska... And it's cold and it's blue and it's fresh and it's, you think about the colour palette that we've seen previously, not just in the film but also in the TV series. There's a lot of like warm colours, like yellows, greens as well. And colour is, of course, a dominant category and factor in the entirety of Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. But I love that it was just a completely different colour palette from everything that we've been used to. And it was just such bright colours, like hopeful colours, like new colours, when he's going into sort of that big foresty area with all of snow caps. It's I just thought it was a really lovely finish to the film.
And then we see his girlfriend with him and I'm like,
Jane!
I didn't know you're gonna be there.
Jane, I know.
Hell. Just that one moment I was like, oh,
that was obviously before the heroin.
Yes.
Yes.
And it's a beautiful way to bookend this film with the end of the series. The end of the series, one of the last shots we see is Jesse driving off after escaping the Nazis.
Yeah.
You know, a combination of anger and fear and relief, all those things crossing his face. And this film ends, again, with Jesse driving away, but a look of hope.
Yeah.
First, you know, we're actually thinking, shit, he might be all right now. And I love that. We get to see the ending that he always deserved.
Yeah. I don't think this needs to be elaborated. I think that's the end of it. Let's just close the chapter on Jesse. Let him live his life in Alaska.
Done.
Yeah.
Yeah. The end, bitch! Shall we score it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Go on, Mark, kick it off.
Jesus, that's a tough one, isn't it?
Mm.
I'll watch it again, but it made me want to watch Breaking Bad. I enjoyed it a lot. It's a high 8, which I think is fair.
Marvellous. Ben?
Yes, I agree. I will watch it again, but only when I've watched all of Breaking Bad again. I think my plan is I'm going to wait until Better Call Saul finishes, and then I'm going to watch all of Saul, all of Breaking Bad, and then El Camino in a row, because that's the chronological order of them, isn't it?
That'd be beautiful.
That's nice.
So I'll give it 8 as well.
What Mark said, what Ben said, I too am giving it an 8 out of 10. So that means El Camino, a Breaking Bad film, gets a skip to the end, 8 out of 10.
It's competition time! Yeah! I miss Ben's actually a little
Me
bit.
Me too, can we have Ben again?
Can you do it on the spot?
I've retired.
Oh,
no!
He has a legacy and he's left it where he should. That's good. As you know from that introduction, it's the time to announce all the winners from the last episode, but also give you lovely compers out there the chance to win some amazing prizes for the now.
For the now.
On the last episode, you would have heard Ben talk about the Addams Family set of Funkos, which are really, really cool. And the question we put out there, which was really simple, was, who plays Uncle Fester, the child molester, in the movie Addams Family?
Don't think that was his title.
Okay, but who was it?
But I can tell you it's Christopher Lloyd.
It's true. And Libby Sinclair on email will be getting those in the post. Forrest Gump. Now, these are the Funkos that Ben's been going on and on about. He wants them for his own collection. He wants the chase. He wants this one.
Like, gimme, gimme, gimme.
But he's not allowed them, so we're going to give them away to a lucky winner that got this right. Okay, life is like a box of A, cake, B, cider, or C, chocolates.
What? Child
chocolates. I'm guessing by the acting that Mark's just done, it's chocolates.
It is.
Let's hope it was.
It is. And Simon Williams on Twitter will be getting those. What a great prize that is. Because we reviewed Joker. We did. We had some... Well, this is the Dark Knight Joker, because they didn't release the proper ones, but they should have. Right. And we had three of these to give away. And the simple question we put out there was, who plays the Joker in the Dark Knight film?
Heath Ledger.
It's true. Adam Bagshaw.
Gemma wins.
Darren... Darren Upton and Liam Keaton were getting those, and they all came via email. So good on you.
Well done.
Gemma, do you want one? I'll ask Sally to get you one.
Yes, please.
Okay, then. Brilliant. Last Exit to Nowhere came along and tied in nicely with our rewatch of the one and only...
Hot Fuzz. Did you forget?
I did. You helped me there, which is good. They had the NWA t-shirt, which is awesome, man. Neighbourhood Watch Alliance. See what they did there? Very clever.
Yeah.
Simon Pegg plays... Simon Pegg plays which character in Hot Fuzz?
Nicholas Angel.
At Fraser Varney will be getting that in the post. Also, they gave us a Joker tee to go nicely with our Joker. Again, it's from The Dark Knight, but the design's beautiful. Of just the face, it works.
Yeah.
Who directed The Dark Knight?
Christopher Nolan.
Todd28289 will be getting that in the post via Twitter. And finally, to celebrate from Richer Sounds, the release of the Cambridge Audio headphones, we had a competition that Ben set on the day of Send Us Your Best Halloween Costume.
Ooh.
Which is really cool. So Ben, look at this prize. Look at this guy.
Oh my God.
And read it out what you can see.
So it's from our friend Ricky Michael Hill, and he says, for your Halloween competition consideration, it's me dressed as Rose West, complete with brick. Holy Jesus.
If that doesn't deserve a prize, describe
it. That's disturbing.
It's pretty. He's got a dress on.
So he's wearing what is clearly women's clothing.
Yes.
And some big oversized Deirdre Barlow glasses, and he's quite literally holding a brick.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
I'm worried.
So he's got headphones for that. That's a great effort. There's other people doing normal stuff like Halloween, but that one caught my eye. So well done.
Mark went, hello!
Now let's give away some more prizes. There's nothing Funko related for our main review of Breaking Bad. They did them years ago.
Yeah.
Sully's like, aww, I can't, man. They're like, they're vaulted. They're worth hundreds. So, close, the brand new set of Harry Potter Funkos.
Just exactly the same.
Let's say, really simple, to win all 9 Funko Pops, who wrote Harry Potter? So easy. Yeah.
Methiamus.
With Halloween coming up at the moment and scary films, they've got a full set of the brand new Purge Pops. Do you like those films, The Purge?
Nope.
No, okay.
Not really.
But you like the Funkos.
That's
Yes.
Yeah.
Who directed the Purge movie? I was going to say, who would you kill first if there was a Purge? But then you're going to get started people tweeting people. And you're like, oh shit.
The worst ego boost ever.
Yes. And they've also given us the brand new set of the James Bond Funkos.
Ooh.
And it's a brand new set of 8. And what I want people to do is tell me their favourite Bond villain.
Oh, very good.
That'd be quite nice.
Amazing.
Last Exit came along, and because we're mass debating over the one and only...
Danny Boyle.
I forgot again, so
me
that's
too.
Good work.
Don't worry, don't worry.
I like it.
Nearly got that too.
They've given us the Sunshine t-shirt, which is really, really cool. So let's say, who directed Sunshine? Yes. And they've just released a brand new design of the Winchester pub from Shaun of the Dead, which is really, really cool.
Lovely.
Really cool design. Let's say, what film is the Winchester pub from? Is that all right?
How long did you prep simple. For these questions?
Oh, all day. I just got to think. I've got to make people work for these prizes.
Really shows.
The best way to enter our competitions is to go on skiptotheend.co.uk, because on there's our Twitter, our Facebook, our Instagram, and as you heard, most of our winners today, via email.
Ooh.
Let's keep email alive.
Yes, email.
And what we'll do, we'll come back in 2 weeks and announce the winners of all these incredible prizes.
Is It's now time for Movie Masturbate, the section of the show where we take a name out of the pot of directors and we talk about our favourite film from that particular person. And on the last episode, we chose, oh, Danny Boyle, the pipes are calling.
What is she
from
taking
Glen
today?
To Glen.
Fucking mentalist. Yeah, so Danny Boyle.
Just go with it. It's cool. Okay, yeah. So Danny Boyle, and of course he's got a lot of films in his repertoire. So I have a feeling we probably can. I don't think we've got a match here, guys. I think we've come
that's
away.
Huge words.
Yeah, I genuinely think we have got three individual films.
Watch
and
it
we
out.
Can.
All of us got it too.
Nah, I think I'm hopeful. So Ben, I want to throw this over to you. Hit me.
Sunshine.
Woo! Don't you dare. Don't you dare.
I haven't got it.
Oh,
excellent.
Thank goodness.
And before I get into it, let's just say happy birthday to him. It was his birthday yesterday.
Happy birthday, Danny!
And now he can listen to us wanking over him.
Oh, there we go. That's
perfect
that's
birthday present.
Everybody wants that.
So I absolutely love Sunshine. The first word that comes into my mind when I think of this film is underrated.
Yes!
Yeah.
Not enough people give this film its due, although of course we did when we rewatched it back on episode 94. One of the things I love about it that so many people dislike is how it turns from a kind of standard sci-fi space movie halfway through into an outright horror in its final reel. It has that kind of From Dusk Till Dawn thing where it becomes something you weren't expecting
so
at the
iconic.
End. And I think that shows great skill on the part of Danny Boyle to create a film that works essentially in two different genres, but do them both justice. The film looks incredible, doesn't it?
Stunning.
Yeah.
Absolutely gorgeous. Thanks to Boyle's assured direction and some beautiful cinematography from Alwyn Kukla. It's got a great cast as well, mm-hmm. with several actors from the Avengers universe, including Chris Evans, Benedict Wong, and Hiroyuki Sanada, as well as a great lead performance from Cillian Murphy.
Yes.
Oh my God, he's good.
He's one of our favourites around these
parts.
I
love him.
The old Cillian.
We like him.
And to be honest, I'm not going to say any more on this, because if you want to hear us expound on how great it is, go and listen to episode 94.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. I still think the best thing about Sunshine is Mr. Sausage.
Hello! Mr. Sausage.
And
listen to that episode to find out what the fuck she's on about.
Yeah, it all makes sense.
It's a fucking amazing film.
That plot twist, though.
Yes. Whew. Amazing.
Oh, mercy.
Done.
Excellent. Mark, go on.
Trainspotting.
What?
Is that Trainspotting?
Indian
Trainspotting.
Rainspotting. Oh, right. Okay.
Yes.
Sorry, I couldn't understand.
This film, for me, was like nothing else. And it's the first film that I actually watched, and afterwards I went out and bought the soundtrack.
Oh!
So from 1996, think about it, I was probably about 14. I was there, sitting there thinking, I'm going to go and buy this. Because before then, I didn't really care for soundtracks. I'd watch a film and I didn't really take notice. Every song on that serves a purpose in the film. I fucking love it. This film's quite self-explanatory. If you go for a day out in Edinburgh, most people are doing drugs. So
I thought you were genuinely going to say everyone wants to see the Flying Scotsman.
So
just race on by.
They're basically trying to help clean up this guy called Renton, who's played by Ewan McGregor. And off air a minute ago, we were just talking about Ewan McGregor.
Yeah.
And I think this is his only strong, decent role pretty much in film history.
Let's be honest, he's a poor man's James McAvoy.
Yes.
Oh!
We're allowed to say it.
Yeah, it's true, actually.
But it's based on the novel by Irvin Welsh. Mm-hmm. And it's a great film. I love all the characters. It's one of those films that I think is the like epitome of the 90s. Mm-hmm. If you think of the film that everyone had on their walls at uni, it's Kill Bill, and they had this, that really iconic post where they all stood up, and it's the orange. And everyone talked about this film. There's some great characters. Spud, Sick Boy, Begbie, played by Robert Carlyle.
Yeah,
there we go. And he's great. He's not like anything you've seen before. He's just an odd bastard.
He's fucking terrifying.
One of the greatest scenes in film history is when he's on the upper deck of the bar and he hoys the glass below him.
Yeah.
So that it causes havoc. And then when people start fighting, he's like, yes!
And just walks.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's fucking great.
Who glassed this wee lassie?
And if he followed you in the toilet, you're just going to be fucked. Mm-hmm. And not in the way of like in prison, as in you're just going to get absolutely nailed. And again, not like that. No. He's a hard bastard.
There we go.
Absolute hard bastard. And for me, there's a scene that we've talked about in the podcast a couple of times. The baby scene always sticks with
horrifying.
Me. Absolutely horrendous.
I can't shake that out of my dreams.
And the toilet scene, which where we see him first go down and get into. And that shot and that directing is brilliant. And we hadn't seen stuff like that back then. It was brilliant. Mm-hmm. I still watch it now. And do you know what? To this day, I've never seen the sequel.
Ditto.
Me
and that's mad, considering how much I love this film. And people say, oh, it's great, and it's really good, and he only did it because it was worthwhile, and all the characters came back. I've never watched it.
No, we were scheduled to review it, and then we couldn't be arsed, so we changed it. We changed it for something else at the last minute.
But yeah, you can't say anything bad about this film. It's funny, it's heartbreaking, and it's just brilliant.
And I agree about the soundtrack. I too went out and bought it because you had things like Perfect Day, Lust for Life.
Oh my God.
There was some kind of weird like orbital songs on there, I think, as well, like dance songs.
Atomic by Sleeper, which is a really good version too.
Oh, what a film.
Great soundtrack.
Yeah, also at the beginning, the Choose Life speech.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. Where you've got Iggy Pop sort of blaring over. So good. I decided not to choose life.
So good.
I chose something else.
Our Scottish impressions are pretty good.
Yours isn't.
No.
No, you're...
Tarine Spartan.
Gladiators! Ready!
Yeah, I'm rubbish. So you're right then, we're not all on the same page. Well done.
I am right, and I've gone for no surprise whatsoever. I've gone for 28 Days Later.
Ooh.
Absolutely incredible. A rage virus gets introduced to the public in the UK and it results in 4 weeks' worth of carnage, infection and devastation. And 28 days later, like the film suggests, we follow a handful of survivors who are trying to find sanctuary from the disease. And people always argue and say, you know what, it's not a zombie film. Oh, of course, it's a fucking period drama piece.
Are period again, me? Here we go. Period this, period that.
Get your mind out of the gutter, sport. But I think it's a zombie film, and I chuffing love it because it's a different concept on zombies. You know, you're so used to the lumbering lunks that just sort of slowly go towards you and just slowly bite you and kill you. With this, this is all about anger. It's all about rage. It's quick. It's ferocious. It's just so frantic. It's, you know, visceral. And I love this about it because it was something unlike anything we had ever seen before. And the cinematography, it's almost classic Danny Boyle cinematography. It's a guy called Anthony Dodd-Mantle who's done Trainspotting and 127 Hours. Fellow Boyle films.
Nice.
And it has this beautiful apocalyptic wash of green and yellow tinges, kind of like Breaking Bad, weirdly enough. And you really feel like you're looking at the landscape of unimaginable horror and ruin. And also the story makes you realise the zombies aren't necessarily the monsters in this film. It is the ordinary people that are there to save you. I know, I'm spoiling the film. What am I like? But it's also responsible for a score called In a Heartbeat by John Murphy. And it's one of the most effective pieces of music that's layered. It builds up to a crescendo where madness just ensues. And that's during the latter part of the film. Also, Secret Cinema covered this event 2 years ago. And I was talking to my better half in the world about this the other day. And we were talking about the Secret Cinema event because I said, MMD, I really want to go for 28 Days Later. And talking about the event makes me realise just how well put this film is together and the event itself. It was so meticulous and everything was done with such care and attention. I love this film so much.
Do you know, going back to what you were saying there about how people say that it's not a zombie film because they're done in a different way. Zombies are imaginary fictional creatures. How can you get your fucking knickers in a twist if they don't walk in the same way that you think they should walk? Yeah. They're made up. Like, yeah. They can be anything we want them to be. They're fucking fictional.
It's like when people go, no, it's not an orc, it's an elf, because elf have like wizard sticks or something like
die.
That. Like, I couldn't give a monkey shit.
I like 28 Days Later. I think it's a great choice.
Yeah.
Do you know that when that came out at the Secret Cinema, it had 4 reviews on the poster? MTV.
Yeah.
BBC.
Okay.
Matt Bellamy from Muse.
Matt Bellamy from Muse.
And Skip to the End.
Who?
Not bad, eh? And it didn't say Cage is mesmerising.
Should have.
Don't worry. Don't worry. Ben didn't go mad about that one. Flip a table. But Mr. Murphy, our good friend, in that steals it. And it's a one-man show for most of the film. And I love the way that they made London so... What's the word?
Desolate. Just,
that's the word. I always use that
abandoned.
Word. Abandoned. Yeah, it's brilliant. And I love the sequel as well. The opening scene with, again, Robert Carlyle, that whole carnage of the first 5 minutes is brilliant. Yeah. Adrenaline through the roof.
Adrenaline Alley.
It's brilliant.
Pennsylvania.
He's got some good films, hasn't he? He has got some good films.
He has got some good films. Do you want to see what social media came back with?
Now.
Yeesh.
On Instagram, Thomas Simpson, a.k.a. Simmy41, has said, easily one of the most versatile directors ever. His ability to transition genres with ease is frightening. It's Trainspotting for me, and not just because I'm Scottish. On Facebook, Richard Kibler says, Trainspotting 2 for me, as it far surpasses the original and is one of the best sequels ever made.
Christ!
That's crazy talk.
That's literally the only good review I've ever heard for it.
Jesus.
On Twitter, Pablo Tiley, @Pablo_Tiley, says, The Beach looks stunning and an amazing soundtrack.
It's okay.
Your boy Leo.
Yeah, I don't like that film.
It's his early work, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay.
It just makes me want to go on holiday. It just looks really beautiful.
I just want to listen to All Saints and Maybe.
Yeah, they've shut the island now. It's PP Island in Phuket, and they, because people kept going there, the tourists, they trashed the place, as typical twats do, and now it's not beautiful anymore. It's fucking ruined.
Oh.
So don't book your holiday there. Especially not through Thomas Cook.
Brilliant, topical.
Yeah, see what I did there?
On Facebook, Graham Doyle said, Steve Jobs is superb, but I find much of his catalogue irritating. A total mixed bag, but ultimately a brave director.
I didn't really like the Steve Jobs film.
I thought it was good.
It's all right.
It's all right.
Yeah.
Not a masterpiece. No, you wouldn't watch it again.
It's not iconic, is it?
Crap.
Wow! But
yeah, agree.
On Twitter, Scott Tober at S77Tux has said, Trance gets my vote. A great cast and fantastic use of colour. A brilliant heist film.
I've not seen that. James McAvoy, right?
Yeah. The only thing I know of it is that Rosario Dawson goes full frontal.
Wow.
That's literally the only thing about the film that I'm aware of.
She's hot. Put that on the poster.
Mm-hmm. She's very hot.
Mm-hmm. On Instagram, Caroline Cousin, a.k.a. Kaza_Cousin123, has said Shallow Grave.
Oh, my God, I love that
That's
film.
That's a great film, really underrated.
Actually, Ewan McGregor can act in that as well.
He is good in that, yeah.
I love that film much.
On Twitter, Jonathan Zemsky, at Jay Zemsky, has said Slumdog Millionaire is my favourite.
You know what? I always think of the Office episode when Michael and Holly do their skit.
Slumdufflin Mifflinaire.
Or... was it the toothbrush?
It was an Oscar film. It bored me. It was like, have you seen it? Oh my God. Yes, I have seen it, and it's wank.
I didn't mind it.
The weird thing
is,
I went to see it at the cinema, and I remember the credits rolling and me sat there thinking, oh yeah, I really like that. But then by the time I'd got to the car park, I was like, no, that was wank. It took me literally 40 seconds to realise it was dog shit.
I did the same with 2001 Space Odyssey.
Ah, my ass.
10 out of 10.
On Facebook, Erica Bean said, A Life Less Ordinary, Wacky 90s Madness.
Is that with Cameron Diaz?
Yeah, and Ewan McGregor again.
He was good in that.
He is all right in
best
that.
Actor on the planet. So versatile. But that's a good film. And Ash was on the soundtrack.
I was about to say, I always think of the Ash song, Life Less Ordinary.
Ash,
so good.
Ass.
Or Gash.
Come
on. On Twitter, the great Cordwainer at Zombie Styled said 28 days later, revitalised the zombie genre, stunning.
He also said zombie. High five!
Nice.
And then finally on Facebook, Steve Hennessy says Sunshine, half Alien and half Event Horizon, with stunning visuals and a phenomenal score.
Beautiful.
I agree entirely. Would you like some utterly unscientific analysis?
Yes.
Always.
Trainspotting won by a distance.
Oh, yeah. You pissed it.
In second place was Sunshine, and just one vote behind was 28 Days Later.
Oh,
so
my
beautiful.
God.
We had the big three.
Yeah.
Only a couple of votes for 127 Hours. I expected that to be more popular.
I really like that film.
That's a good movie. Only one vote for that overrated piece of shit, Slumdog Millionaire, thankfully. And the only one of his 13 films that didn't get a single vote was the critically savaged Yesterday.
Oh, that's the new one.
The recent film that imagines that the Beatles don't exist or some shit.
It's not great.
Hasn't it got fucking Ed Sheeran in it?
Yes, it does.
Oh, there you go.
Jesus Christ.
That's why no one voted for it.
I'm surprised that no London 2012 Olympics.
Actually, someone did say that.
Really?
Yeah, it was funny. That was well done.
It was well.
It doesn't count.
No.
Well done, Danny.
Whose turn is it to pick out of the pot?
It's mine.
Poochinders.
Would you like a drum roll?
Always, please. Oh, make sure I don't get two.
Don't make us wait. This is suspense as it is.
It's so tightly coiled together. On the next episode, our movie masturbate will be... Darren Aronofsky!
Ooh!
I knew a man who once said death smiles at us all. All a man can do is smile back.
Rewatch O'Clock. In Ridley Scott's Gladiator, Russell Crowe plays Maximus Decimus Meridius, a Roman general under the leadership of Emperor Marcus Aurelius. Marcus wants Maximus to follow him as the next leader of Rome, as he can't trust his wayward son Commodus, played by Joaquin Phoenix. Commodus, furious at being overlooked, kills his father, usurps his throne, and kills Maximus's family, whilst Maximus is captured by slavers and thrown into the gladiatorial arena. Maximus is devastated and furious and vows to have his vengeance in this life or the next. The film also stars Richard Harris, Connie Nielsen, Jimon Hounsou and Oliver Reed in his final film role. Mark, I'm going to throw this over to you first. Were you not entertained?
See, that's good. See what he's done there?
That's really good.
I've watched this film about 50 times with my dad. It's one of his favourite films of all time. I see why. It's absolutely incredible and one of Ridley Scott's finest piece of work. It's just captivating from start to finish, and I fucking love it.
Thank you, Mark. Gemma, I want your thoughts next. At my signal, unleash hell!
You know what? I've only seen this twice.
Wow.
And that was probably about 18 years ago after it had been released. And watching this again, God's honest truth, knocked me on my ass. Mm-hmm. With historically set films, I'm not usually kind of au fait to them. They don't often hold my attention. But this film captivated me every single second. And it's a film with the goodest of boys and the baddest of boys thrown in with a bit of sun-washed Rome and blood-spilled violence. Yes!
It's a weird way to put it, but she's on the money.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Thank you.
It's an epic, in the truest meaning of that word. It's an old-school Hollywood type of film, harking back to the days of Spartacus and Ben-Hur. And I think its true skill is that it aims to be an Oscar-bait film, but also a big-budget crowd-pleaser, and it succeeds on all counts. A fantastic film. Mm-hmm. Let's get straight into it, and let's talk about him, the big man himself, Big Rusty, Russell Crowe.
Big Rusty Crowe.
Mark, talk to me about Russell Crowe. How great is he in this damn film?
I don't think he's ever got close to this performance following anything he's ever done. I like the guy. I think he's good. Nice guys and stuff. He does comedy well. He does quite a lot of these epics, doesn't he? These stupid films where he's on a boat just trying to survive.
Master Commander.
All that sort of stuff. But he was born for this role. He absolutely commands it. He's up against some big weights. Joaquin Phoenix. A young Joaquin Phoenix is still knocking it out of the park every fucking 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But it's his film. The moment he comes on, every action sequence, everything about him, he's phenomenal. It's probably one of the best roles in history. He's that fucking good, and he deserves every award under the sun.
Did you say the same thing about 2001 A Space Odyssey?
Top three underrated films, Gladiator. Overrated. But yeah, he's fucking incredible.
Yeah, he has this mark of heroism about it, especially when we meet him at the first part of the film commanding that army. You know, he's clearly successful. He has the respect of everybody around him, and his ideals and heart are in the right place. Even when he talks about going home to the farm and meeting his son and his wife, and he's really looking forward to it, but he has this kind of... It's almost stoic, isn't it? You know, he's very humble, he's very grounded. And of course, when everything goes, in a word, tits up, it completely changes him, and he's kind of forced to take on this new persona just to survive. And I think to have that kind of that regalness without being royalty at the first part of the film, and almost to having nothing whatsoever, it really does take an extraordinary skill to pull that off. And I think this was Russell Crowe at his peak, as Mark just said.
Yeah, it's undoubtedly one of his greatest performances. It was at that point in his career when he could just do no wrong.
Yeah.
He was doing great work in films like this, LA Confidential, A Beautiful Mind.
Oh, fucking
Quick
up,
and the Dead, yeah.
The Insider. He was nominated for Quick and the Dead.
I thought nobody had noticed that. He's great.
He was nominated for an Oscar 3 years running, 2000, 2001, 2002. And he hasn't been nominated since.
I know.
He's just been cruising, doing absolute shit for the last 17 years.
Do you remember the debacle that happened when he started quoting controversial poetry on a BAFTA win, and all the Oscar kind of people just went, nah.
Not having this.
This isn't for you anymore, son.
Yeah,
that's it. And I don't think he's the type to go out looking for one as well. Yeah. You have to lobby to get nominated for an Oscar. You have to put the graft in and turn up to all these events. And he ain't the type.
Nah.
He's the kind of bloke who you want to go and have a beer with.
Yeah.
You want to go and have a few pints with him, get in a scrap.
Yeah.
Have a kebab on the way home. Yeah. Pass out on your doorstep. Yeah. He's that kind of lad. I'd love to be mates with him.
And then just sing in his band.
Was it 40-odd foot
of grunts?
He goes to football all the time. That's all you ever see him at the matches. I think he supports Fulham or something like that.
No, he supports Leeds, of all people.
And he just gets drunk.
Yeah.
I bet he's the type of guy that probably has a recipe for, like, a meat pie. Like, oh, I've got a cracking one here for you. You put some ale in it. Brilliant. Puts hairs on your chest.
What's that?
So that's an Australian accent, apparently. Yeah. Apparently.
Hell. Australia just down the road from Glasgow.
I don't know.
Okay, is that your Australian accent?
It's off the road from your accent earlier on, Scotland.
That's terrible.
All right, kids, let's not pick her. Let's move on to our co-star in this film. It's the second film in as many episodes, spoiler alert, where Joaquin Phoenix smothers one of his parents to death.
Nice!
Yeah. It's a fucking brilliant performance from Phoenix in what was his breakthrough role and his first Oscar nomination.
Christ.
His role as Commodus, he's such a petulant, self-pitying, immature little shit.
Yes.
Yeah. And you just want to smash his face in.
He's got that face like Jared Leto in Fight Club, where you just want to punch and punch and punch. And he's pretty, but he's so young, isn't he, in this film? And I can't believe it's one of his breakout fucking performances.
Yeah.
But he didn't win, though. He didn't win the Oscar.
No, he was nominated.
It's the sneer. It's that self-entitlement of sneer that makes him so repulsive and so slimy. And also, trying on with his own sister... Oh, get in the sea. Disgusting.
I like the fact that he's kind of a bit chubby around the face, and that was intentional. Apparently he turned up for filming significantly thinner and he got fatter as it went through. And Ridley Scott said to him, dude, you need to look after yourself.
You need to put down the fork.
And he said, no, because I look at myself like I'm an emperor. I'm going to lounge around eating all the nicest foods and drinking the best wine. Of course I'm going to get fat. That's what would happen to a pampered little rich boy like him.
I'm sorry, no joke. I want this job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I get that. Amazing. So it makes sense that he kind of gets fatter in the face as the film goes through.
Fair play to him.
But it's an absolutely brilliant performance. And let's skip ahead to some of the scenes between Maximus and Commodus. I love the final battle. Let's skip to the end.
Oh, my God.
Brilliant.
The final battle between Maximus and Commodus. It's a proper slobber knocker, to use a Jim Ross term. And that little fucker gets what he deserves.
He does.
Thank fuck. But the thing is, like, those scenes now you don't get in many films. They go on. And it's not too much where it's like they live. Mm. But it's a proper battle where you don't know who's going to win. Mm-hmm. Now it's just a psh in like... I'm sorry to compare it to this, but if you think of like Hobbs and Shaw, it's a punch and a throw for a window and that's it, the battle's over.
Yeah.
In this, it's a grinded out proper battle.
Yeah.
Fucking brilliant.
I am here for the pomp of it all, when they're just going up to the amphitheatre and those rose petals are just cascading onto them. And I'm here for the drama, and that just made me clutch my pearls. I was like, oh my God, this is so good. But of course, because he's so slimy, so snivelling, he gets the first hit in and he almost like terminally wounds Maximus, which means when the crowd see him for the first time, they think he's just been on a few bevvies.
Which is what you'd usually imagine of Russell Crowe if you saw him sort of stumbling around. That's usually what's happened.
It's just normal Tuesday night.
But that Colosseum scene is magnificent. All the scenes in the Colosseum are really. They look amazing. And we're used to that kind of thing at this point. We've seen big Colosseum scenes in things like Attack of the Clones.
In
Thor Ragnarok, we had a big Colosseum scene. So those and countless others. So those kind of things really aren't new to us now. But at the time, when this film came out 19 years ago, It was kind of striking because these kind of epic sword and sandal films, as they called them, had fallen out of favour since the 60s. There was a brief return in the 80s, but generally people weren't making these kind of films anymore.
Yeah.
So we didn't have that type of spectacle. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of old news to us now. But then, 18, 19 years ago, it was amazing seeing the Colosseum, especially the way they did it. It was a mixture of practical and computer effects. So they kind of built a Colosseum from scratch, but only a few rows up, and then used CGI and other practical effects to build it above that. It's brilliant work.
I absolutely love the scene when the gladiators are in, the slaves, and you've got the chariot sort of circling them and the archer just on sort of the actual podium just firing the shots. And it's so scary. And what I love about it, it's so close up. And you see the spurts of blood, you see the decapitations of like limbs and like waists and heads.
Yeah.
I absolutely love the thrill of it all.
When he cuts that one chick in half.
That's fucking amazing. So good.
It doesn't look dated, considering it's nearly 20 years old. That's fucking mental.
Yeah. The only bits that kind of look a little bit ropey are the final couple of scenes with Oliver Reed, because he died during the making of the film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they had to use CGI on his last couple of scenes, and they've done it really poorly, because all they've done is they've copied and pasted bits from earlier in the film onto some other bloke's body later on in the film. So you see him do the exact same mannerism he did half an hour earlier. It's like, why didn't you use some of the takes you didn't use rather than just copying and pasting something that's already in the film?
It kind of looked like the top half of his face stayed exactly where it was. It was like frozen. You know when you get like that little spinning wheel on your computer where it pauses, and then the mouth was just moving like a friggin' Muppet. It was just like... But he was just completely like...
I think it's one of the first films that used that CGI effect on the face.
Yeah.
So that's why. So you've got to give him credit. At the time, they're still probably going, this is tough.
I think it was it was during the time of Queen of the Damned too, because Aaliyah had passed away during the film, and then they used the same kind of technology too. So
and the crow.
Yeah, absolutely. There's one character that still gives me the chills whenever I watch it. Do you remember, is it Tigris or Tigris of Gaul?
Yeah.
With the metal mask on
it.
It's got like that sort of engraved tear on it.
It looks awesome.
It looks so badass. But I was also really scared when I first saw it, because you don't see his face whatsoever. You just see this sort of mountain, this kind of gladiator that's undefeated and is going to slice him. But of course, old Russy Crow gets there in the end. But he spares him. Doesn't kill him. Because he's a good guy. He's the goodest of boys.
He's the hero of Rome. Do you know what's amazing to me? It's when they started filming this, the script was incomplete.
What?
They didn't even have a shooting script. It was like an Uwe Boll film.
So it's a lot like Uwe Boll. You can see that.
So it led to a lot of additions and revisions on set, including Crowe writing some of his own dialogue. So apparently the famous line, "At my signal, unleash hell," was an ad-lib from Crowe. He just came up with that.
What a dude.
Which is amazing. I think there's only one thing about the film that doesn't ring true for me. It's the scene towards the end where Maximus kisses Lucilla, or whatever her name is.
Oh, yeah.
He's supposed to be devastated about the death of his wife. That's all he's been whinging about. Yeah. Oh, my wife. Yeah. but then he's hooking up with his ex.
Yeah, he starts macking on it, doesn't he? Oh,
it hasn't been long, has it?
No. The body's not even cold.
No. Yeah, at least let it go. Yeah. Be buried and then get it on.
And he's like, lads at Weatherspoons at 10 o'clock on a Saturday. Like, you're right, love.
Exactly like that.
It's exactly like that. The script would have been better if he'd have ad-libbed, you're right, love.
I got Jaeger bombs.
Only us can go from Gladiator to how great the recreation of ancient Rome is to fucking Weatherspoons.
Oh dear. The ending gets me. Yeah. You know what? I genuinely didn't think I was going to get affected by it because, like I said, it's been a good 18 years since I last saw this. So I was like, I remember watching the final scene going, I'm fine. I'm absolutely fine. I'm fine. And then Lucille runs to him and goes, go to them. It's like, and then, of course, the music kicks in too.
Mm-hmm. Hans Zimmer.
Absolutely gorgeous. But really sort of the nail in the coffin, apologies, is when all the gladiators come along, they say, we'll carry him out. And like brothers, they put him on his shoulders.
It's absolutely epic.
It just tears my heart apart.
And the best bit is, as they're carrying him out of the arena, Commodus is just dead on the floor. No one even checks on that prick. Fuck him. Let the crows have him.
It's all right, the bins are out on Tuesday. That'll sort it out.
But he has his revenge because he does come back as the Joker.
Yeah,
and
that's
a great fucking revenge.
Did you ever hear about the planned sequel for this?
No.
Fucking hell, really?
Yeah, so initially there was going to be a sequel where Lucilla's little prick kid.
I forgot about him.
The kid from Glass. It was going to be set on him like 20 years later or something,
Jesus.
What he's doing.
No.
But when they started talking about a sequel, Russell Crowe went, no, if you're doing a sequel, I'm in it. I'm the greatest actor in the world. And they were like, yeah, but you're dead.
Yeah.
The character's dead as disco. And he went, right, we'll work it out. So what the plan was going to be is that he was going to be resurrected
by
the Roman gods. And they even went so far as to write a script. The script was written by, of all people, the musician Nick Cave.
Yes, Nick Cave!
There exists a script where he's brought back to life.
I would watch that.
And then protects the Christians against the Romans or some shit.
Can we get this made? Because Nick Cave is one of the greatest men of all time.
I'd love to read that script.
Yeah.
Let's get a Kickstarter going.
Yes! Nick Cave, if you're listening.
Mac and Me Too first, then this.
Yeah. I don't know.
That's fucking insane.
But it's a great film, and it's just an epic. I said this at the start, and I'll end it with that. It's just an epic film. That you don't really see these kind of films very often anymore. And at the point when this came out, we didn't see them at all.
No.
There's been a few since, but they just don't make them like this.
Did you guys watch the standard cut of the director's? Because mine was nearly 3 hours, so I think it's like a director's cut.
I watched whichever one was on Amazon Prime.
Same here.
Yes. I don't know what the differences are, but it's about 20 minutes. So.
I was there for 2 days.
It didn't feel that long.
No. Shall we score it?
Let's.
I'm going to go to you first then, Mark.
Fucking, that's a tough one, isn't it? Yeah. It really is. It's going to be a 9. It's fucking brilliant. Mm-hmm. You don't make films like this. Ridley Scott definitely doesn't make films like this anymore. He should do. Yeah, high 9 out of 10. And then I'll call it boring in a few months.
Of course you will.
It's not for me.
Send me to sleep.
Gemma, what are you giving it?
Screw it. I don't mind the dodgy CGI. I think the story's there, the heart is there. And I immediately want to watch it again. It's a 10.
Wowza.
It's a 10.
A perfect movie for Gemma.
Absolutely. It's wonderful.
I'm not quite there with you. I'm with Mark on this one. It's a 9, but a very high 9. It is an excellent film. And that gives it an overall, skip to the end, 9 out of 10.
That's awesome. Wonderful. How much fun was that?
That's a lot of fun. But I have a feeling there could be a lot more fun with whoever's picking us next. Who's picking
it? Who is it?
It's mine. So we're going to have a lot of difficulty on the next rewatch.
Has it got loads of names you can't pronounce?
No, because the first rule is we shouldn't be talking about it.
Oh my God!
We're going to be rewatching Fight Club.
Yeah! Here it is, guys. The third and final round of Who Dares Wins. Oh my God, we have got ourselves a match on this particular episode. We have Ben and we have Mark.
Sorry, listeners out there who just fucking lost their hearing. Let's quiet it down a bit. Mellow.
I've got neighbours, Gemma.
It's all right. They're fine. They won't mind it. They'll probably be there for spectating.
They're noisy bitches anyway. Fuck them.
Noisy bitches.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So we've got ourselves quite a match, some might say. And it's really all to play for. So on the first round, Mark won. I played you on the first round, didn't I? Yeah. Sorry. It's just, it's what happens when you lose. You forget everything. And on round two, Ben won.
Yes.
So it really is all to play for. One of you guys is going to emerge the winner. How do you all feel?
Pretty good, because it's not about skill in this really anymore, is it? Because you can just fucking blag it and go, oh, yeah, you go then, Ben. And then on the spot, you're like, what? So
Ben,
we'll have fun.
Yeah. How are you feeling?
Yeah, similar to Mark. I mean, it's essentially a memory game, and Mark and I both historically have dog shit memories, so this ain't going to go well.
No.
Don't worry. Well, I'm going to hold my wooden spoon aloft with pride. But in the meantime, let's tell you folks at home the rules of the game. So what is going to happen is I'm going to give a subject, and I'm going to give them the last 10 or current 10 things. So, for example, there was the choice of the last 10 Oscar-winning films. And so what these guys have to do, for example, Mark, he starts off and he might want to say, I'm going to guess 3 of those. Then Ben's going to go, actually, I'm going to guess 4 of those. Mark could always say, no, I'm going to choose 5. Or he could say, Ben, the stage is yours. Go ahead. So it really is all to play for. I feel like this is going to be a very exciting round. And of course, if that person can name that number of films that they said they were going to name, they will, of course, inherit that amount of points. But if they fail, the points go to the other person.
I like that twist.
It's a real twist, isn't it? Real twisty twist. But I think we should just get on with this fucking game.
Definitely.
But Gemma, how long do each of us get to name those things?
Ben, I'm glad you asked. It's going to be 90 seconds.
Mm. Oh, a minute and a half. That's quite tough.
It is. But it does mean that you guys get enough time to come up with some answers.
Well, hopefully.
Otherwise,
it's hard. The Carry On one was hard. Oh, the Bond one's hard.
Every one of them was hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're put on the spot too,
people don't understand that.
No.
Let's get on with it.
Ben, you're my favourite.
You can go
first.
Thanks,
Jim.
Okay, so your first topic is the last 10 Studio Ghibli movies.
Yowza.
How many do you think you can get?
I'm going to go a safe... Well, I don't know how safe it is, but I'm going to go 4.
4? Okay.
Yeah.
Ben says 4. Mark, what say you?
Fucking hell, the last 10.
The last 10 released Studio Ghibli movies.
I'm making play for 4.
Oh,
that's not many, but it's the last 10 that might catch you out.
Okay, so Ben, are you ready?
Yes.
Your time starts now.
Ponyo.
Yes.
The Wind Rises.
Yes.
Princess Mononoke.
No.
Spirited Away.
Yes.
Fucking hell, it's
over. One more.
Oh, My Neighbor Totoro.
No.
Oh, Porco Rosso.
No, I'm afraid.
That sounds like a porno, doesn't it?
Oh, it totally is. Porco Rosso. Whoa.
Red pig.
Lads.
Hey, people have different tastes.
I need one more, do I?
One more? You're doing really well. You've got 3 so far.
Oh, crutch. Laputa Castle in the Sky.
No, I'm afraid not.
Who fucked a pig?
Who fucked a pig?
Not James Cameron. Cameron, the Prime Minister guy.
This isn't helping me, by the way.
Yeah. So,
zero lid.
We're talking at Studio Ghibli movies. You now have 45 seconds left to go.
Oh, God.
Just the one.
Arrietty.
He's done it!
Fuck yeah!
Oh, my God. Congratulations. Arrietty, you got there right at the last minute.
Not easy, is it?
No.
So, Ben, you do have 4 points. The other films that I was going to accept was When Marnie Was There, The Tale of Princess Kaguya, of course, The Wind Rises, From Up on Poppy Hill, you got Arrietty and you got Ponyo. You also could have had Tales from Earthsea, Howl's Moving Castle, and The Cat Returns.
Not easy, is it?
No, the only other one of those I would have remembered at some point was Howl's Moving Castle.
I know. But isn't it hard when you're on the spot?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So your topic, you have got the top 10 highest grossing movie sequels.
Oh, that's a goodie. I like that.
So how many do you think you've definitely got in the bed?
Fucking hell. 4?
Okay, Mark says 4. Ben?
Now, may I ask a question?
You can ask a question.
When you say sequel,
does
it therefore have to be the second film in a series, or can it be any of the subsequent films in said series?
It can be any of the subsequent. A lot of them are sequels, but it can be...
Hang on, you're helping him there.
Well, I asked a question.
Yeah. You asked,
no one said I couldn't.
Hey,
no.
I'm going to give the good man an answer.
How many did you say you can get?
He said 4.
14.
He said 4, Ben.
He said 4.
What do you think?
I think I can beat that.
You do?
But I'm going to let him have a go.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I love this.
Fuck.
Okay, Mark, are you ready?
Oh, fuck. I didn't want to play this. That's why I went really low.
Then away we go.
Avengers.
No.
Which one? You can't just say Avengers. Which one? But if the answer's no to any of them, it doesn't matter.
Twilight Part 2.
What's the name of it?
No one's
going to
know.
You know what? You can have it. Yes, yeah. It's a yes. Well done.
Star Wars: The Last Jedi.
No.
Episode 2. Star Wars.
Nope.
Lord of the Rings: Two Towers.
Nope.
Whoa.
No, I'm afraid not. Come on, you got one.
What's the timer?
We're on 1 minute, Ben. Thank
of all you. Time, Back to the Future 2.
No.
Oh, fucking hell, biggest rating of all time.
I know. The highest grossing movie sequels.
Godfather Part 2.
No.
What?
Come on. They're all flooding. You can do this.
Not Twilight.
This is hard.
Not Twilight. And we've got 40 seconds now left.
Okay.
Who needs
Toy Story 2. Three?
Toy Story 2. No, he needs three more.
Frozen 2. Is that out yet?
No, it's not out yet, but I'm sure it will be there at some point. But not today, I'm
afraid.
If we
do this quiz in a year, it'll be the right answer.
Pirates of the Caribbean 2.
No.
What? Men in Black 2.
No.
Should be.
16 seconds.
Oh, fucking hell, that's really bad.
I know. There's a couple more sequels we can think
Aliens.
Of. Nope. 8 seconds.
Mac and Me 2.
Nope. You wish it was. 4, 3, 2, 1.
Shite.
Yeah.
Okay, so Mark, you got one. It was a noble effort. Now, I really wanted to give you Pirates of the Caribbean, but it wasn't the second one. It was Dead Man's Chest.
Oh, okay.
It's one of those.
I would give me a point for that, but it doesn't make
all right, all right, you can have the point,
yeah,
Mark.
It makes no difference.
Makes literally no difference.
No, it's okay. Yeah.
You could have said The Dark Knight.
Oh, fucking hell.
Shrek 2.
Oh. Really?
Despicable Me 2.
I know.
Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
Transformers Revenge of the Fallen. Ugh. Spider-Man 2. The Matrix Reloaded. Of course, Twilight Saga New Moon. And Kung Fu Panda 2. Goes to show how fickle the cinemagoers are.
That was hard.
I'm glad I let you play because I would not have beaten that.
Never mind. So it does mean at the moment the scores on the doors are Mark has 1 and Ben has 4. Ben is pissing
I don't get
it.
A point.
Incorrect. I have 80. Yeah. 0.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking 4-1.
I was going to add a star in there
Jesus.
Somewhere too. It's been a long 8-0.
Week. 8-0.
Okay, so 8-0. This could be a pretty epic game. But there's still all to play for.
Yeah.
So we've got the next round. We have the last 10 Oscar winners for Best Animated Feature.
Oh, shit the bed.
So, Ben, do you want to guess or do you want to have Mark to have a guess first?
Let him have a guess.
Yeah, go on, Mark. What do you think? What do you think?
Three.
Three? Okay, yeah. Mark says three, Ben.
Fuck it, 4.
Yeah!
Oh, God.
Mark, do you want to play or do you want
9.
Ben?
No. Yeah, let him play at 4.
You were just saying no in German.
Yeah, 9.
9.
Ben's playing with 4.
Okay, Ben is playing with 4 now. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Let's go.
Oh, God.
Now.
Frozen?
Yes.
Ponyo?
No.
The Wind Rises?
No.
Toy Story 3?
Yes.
Wow.
The Triplets of Belleville?
No, although it should have.
I was nominated, I'm sure.
It was, yeah.
Oh, Shrek 3.
Not on this
Shrek
occasion.
2.
Not on this occasion.
Shrek 1.
No!
Shrek the Puss in
Boots.
Oh,
God. What other Pixar films have been out? Inside Out.
Yes.
How many more do I need?
You need one more. You've got 3. And you're on to 1 minute and 2 seconds.
Oh,
he's won it.
I haven't. Oh, God. Up.
He's done it! Whoa. 4 points. Congratulations.
Motherfucker.
Oh, that was tough.
You know what? I think you could have got all of them, but what we had here was Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, yeah.
Coco.
Yeah.
Zootopia.
No.
It's not bad.
Wouldn't have got
that. It's not bad. Inside Out, you could have got Big Hero 6. You did Frozen. We also had Brave. Rango.
Fuck off.
That does not deserve to be up there. And also Toy Story 3 and up. So well done. Ben is now on 12 points.
I can still win it.
You can still win it. Oh, and good. Mark, I fucking believe in you, mate. You got this.
You could win 2012 at this point.
Yeah.
All to play
I
for.
Might just go 6 and 7 to do it just subtle.
Okay. Well, you might be pleased to hear what the next one is. So we are still doing last 10. Last 10 films starring Leonardo DiCaprio acting, not documentaries. So the last 10 films he starred in. How many do you think you can get right on this one?
This is fucking impossible.
You think it's easy, but then you're on the spot. So what are we thinking?
7.
What? Billy Big Bollocks!
That's
Ben.
Ridiculous.
Let him name them. Fucking hell.
Okay, so for the listeners at home,
I've got to open a beer.
Mark is going to attempt to name 7. the last 7 films.
I won't name 2.
Okay, so this is Leonardo DiCaprio.
I believe in you. I think you can do this,
I think you can do this.
I don't.
1:30. Are you ready?
Yeah.
The last 10 films starring Leonardo DiCaprio. Starting now.
Django Unchained.
Yes.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes.
Oh, shit. Catch Me If You Can. Was that in the last 10?
No, it wasn't, I'm afraid. But I like where your head's at.
Fucking hell, what's he done?
So you're on two at the moment.
Shutter Island.
Shutter Island, yes.
Oh, go on.
Shutter Island is on.
Only four more needed.
Come on, this is out, Leo. 1:10.
Titanic was way too old.
It was way too old. We should forget about that. Yeah. Let's forget about it now. Done.
Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
Yes.
Three more needed, dude.
Come on, you're on 4 points now, 58 seconds.
The only one he's Oscar for. Why am I helping him?
Oh, shit. The Revenant. Yeah.
Five. Cheers, dude. Two more needed.
Cheers.
Okay. Now, you've got this, buddy. I believe in you.
What should he have won the Oscar for the year before?
And plenty, my love.
How long's he got left?
He's got 41 seconds.
You might as well help me and then we'll get a really good final break.
Oh, come on.
If I was somewhere and then left, you might say that I'd
30 seconds. That what? Famous film stuff. You know,
if I was in a room and then I left, you might say that I've
left. Exited.
Another word for that.
20 seconds.
I don't know, dude. Help me, just say it.
No, I'm not going to just say it.
15. You can still do this. 10. Nine. 8. 7. 7. Four, three,
oh,
two,
he's gonna have so
one.
Many points.
Oh, got mate.
It. It was a noble effort, though.
It was really, really great. Well done. You did get 5, so it does mean Ben's kind of won the whole shebang.
It's all right.
But would you like to let you know? Okay, so we did have Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. We had The Revenant. We had Wolf of Wall Street. We had The Great Gatsby.
Oh, nice.
Django Unchained.
I said that. That's
you
right,
did.
Yeah.
I know. Well done, J. Edgar. We also had Inception.
Fuck.
You're about to throw something across the room. Shutter Island, Revolutionary Road, and Body of Lies. Those were the last 10
Oh,
films.
Was The Departed not in there?
Just
the
last
10, yeah. Nice. Last 10, yeah.
You still tried to help, though. I appreciate
I tried,
that.
Yeah, I tried my best.
That's tough. J. Edgar, what the fuck?
That's crap, that film.
Yeah.
Never mind. Let's pretend again. Like Titanic, that didn't happen. So, Ben, I think it's safe to say you have won.
Is he on 19?
Here. 12.
Bottom 7, 19, yeah, brilliant.
Is it 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17?
He's just got 7.
12 plus 7 is 19. Yeah.
Fucking hell.
Remedial maths. You know what I mean?
At least my mum thinks I'm cool.
Right, so shall we say that in round 5, the final round,
all points
are doubled.
Yeah.
So
Mark could win.
This is the real quiz.
Mark could win 2019 as long as he bets 10.
I think I'm going to be sick. Right,
let's do it.
Do you know what? This couldn't have been a more perfect synergized moment. You wait till you hear what the topic is, my friend. The top 10 highest grossing movies of the 80s.
Ooh.
Fuck it, it's just too hard.
I think you can do it.
If I say the title from that franchise instead of that one, does that count as a point?
Not really.
I'll allow it.
Yeah, Ben's going to let this happen.
But then that's double. That's two.
He's still going to get all 10.
That's true, actually. Yeah, let's just give him the benefit of
all
time.
All right, 10.
10. Oh, Ben, do you want to play or do you want him to play?
I mean, he's going to have to play.
Let's do it. Right, okay. Mark. For the final round in Who Dares Wins, are you ready to start your 90 seconds?
Let's fucking do it.
Can we just say, I will let him do that thing where he just says the franchise, but if more than one film from the same franchise is in the list, he has to say them separately.
I think so, right. Okay, so your 90 seconds starts now.
One of the Star Wars films.
Which one?
Well, it's going to be Return of the Jedi, isn't it, in the 80s?
Yeah.
Okay, now we're going to have Top Gun.
Yes.
Thank fuck for that. We're going to have Back to the Future.
Yes. 1:15.
We're going to have E.T.
Yes.
Or
The Thing.
No.
Blade Runner.
The Bond.
Yeah. No.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Which one?
Templar Doom.
No.
Fucking hell. Last Crusade.
Yes.
5.
Okay.
5 right. more needed.
You know what? There might be another one in there.
Oh, right. So
like one you said earlier, too. Just a thought. 50 seconds.
Okay, so we could have Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
And then we could 6. Have the other Indiana Jones, which is The Last Crusade.
Yes. You're on 7. 3 more. Come on.
How long's he got?
He's got 39 seconds.
Aliens.
No, I'm afraid
Alien,
not.
That's not. It's just,
no.
80s. Top Gun. Ghostbusters.
Yeah, man. Sorry. I thought it was humming.
Okay. How do you shrink the kids?
No.
Oh, it should be.
How long's he got?
He's got 22 seconds.
And he needs how many?
Two.
He needs two. biggest I really want to help
Blues
it.
Brothers.
No.
Fucking hell. It's hard, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I really want to help
Police Academy,
them.
One
no.
of them.
Oh, that no.
Mission to Moscow.
It might be something policey, but not Academy.
Gemma.
Blues Brothers.
No.
He said that. Oh, sorry, yeah,
okay. Two. One. What a valiant
was
effort.
Was it going to be Lethal Weapon?
No. Oh. That was such a valiant effort. I really want to tell you. You got 8.
Okay.
Which means I get 16 more points.
Yeah. Which
so,
means...
So Gemma, what's the final score?
I don't know if you guys can count it at home, but I think Ben's won.
I'm pretty sure I got 35 to Mark's 0.
That's pretty good.
I think you did. Do you know what? The other two ones you didn't get, and I really wanted to say it. So it's Batman and Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh, yeah.
But
great theme tunes.
I will say, I think out of all the categories, you got the highest mark in a single category.
You did.
But so it means that's, shit.
Yeah, but you didn't win because Ben won. Mm-hmm. Well Just. Done. Ben has dared to win.
I am the champion.
And you can have the belt.
I am the Brock Lesnar of the podcast.
Steps in, takes the belt, walks away. Yeah. Done.
Does fuck all, gets paid. Yes.
Brilliant. So that means not this week, but next time when the photo goes out on episode 131, you can have the belt.
Will do.
There we go.
So we will be back in 2 weeks' time with a brand new quiz. It'll be a threer. It'll run for three more episodes. Okay. I've already cooked it up. I've already figured it out.
Wow.
But I'm not going to tell you what it is.
Oh, you tease. You absolute tease.
You'll find out on the next episode. It's time for Skip to the Recommend, that point in the show where we bring you our pop culture recommendations of the week. It could be something old, it could be something new, but it's something we're enjoying right now, and we want you to enjoy it too.
I think I did it better. I'm just going to say. But...
You did okay. Yeah. You did okay.
It's all right.
Young B Padawan.
Plus. It is nice, isn't it, to be back in our where we belong.
In our comfortable roles.
Yes.
Like in Gemma's dirty old pants with holes in or whatever.
Oh, God.
I'm telling you, there's nothing quite like the comfort.
Bridget Jones style.
Take your word for it.
There we go.
Rightio, I'm going to throw this over to you, Miss Dirty Old Pants herself. Gemma, what have you got this week?
Clean pants. Yeah, it's
my recommendation.
Clean, aerial.
Clean, clean, comfortable pants. Yes. No holes. I've gone for a film.
Mm.
So I've gone for a little independent film called The Farewell.
Never heard of it.
Okay, so it's directed by Lulu Wang and it stars Awkwafina. And it's about a Chinese family who discover that their grandmother has been diagnosed with a terminal illness and doesn't have long left in this world. So what they decide on doing is keep this a secret from her. They don't let her know that she's going to die, and instead they organise a great big wedding so everybody in the family can come together one last time before she passes away. Now, I'm a big fan of quirky indie films. I absolutely adore them. And this is just the quirkiest, most indiest film that I can think of. And I really do enjoy it. And it's based on what happened to Lulu Wang in real life. So it's kind of like an autobiographical movie. And as I said, it does star Awkwafina as Billy, who is the granddaughter of the beloved grandmother.
Hold on a sec. Isn't it Awkwafina? Because I'm pretty sure Awkwafina is a character from BoJack Horseman.
Probably. Awkwafina. Awkwafina. Awkwafina? Awkwafina.
One of them.
Pretty sure it's Awkwafina.
Let's say Awkwafina. I can go for Awkwafina. At least I haven't said, you know, it's like, you know... she's more known for her comedic roles, so she's done a lot of things in Saturday Night Live, and of course she's known and broke through as Picklin in Crazy Rich Asians, and she's also the voice in The Dark Crystal that you enjoyed
very
too.
Good.
But it's really refreshing to see how multifaceted of an actress that she really is, because she delivers a real emotional and warm performance out of the film. And we also have a really beautiful performance from Xu Zhenzhao, who plays the matriarch of the family, and you kind of understand why the family are really devastated, because she just shows so much warmth and strength throughout the whole film. And I just love this so much because it is such an original story. You know, we are, I think I've mentioned this countless of other times, but we really are in an age of where money rules supreme. Original stories get shunted at the back of the queue. Mm-hmm. You know, we see more reboots, we see more sequels, we see more unnecessary films turn from TV to the big screen on in cinemas. But it's just such a sweet and real feel-good and warm story. I also saw this at my local independent cinema, the Northampton Film House, represents. And it's a really good place to see these original stories. So anybody that is listening out there, check this out. But also go to your local independent cinema. Go and see these wonderful and crazy stories that don't get the coverage that they should do. And just enjoy it.
That's just made me think of something. Did you guys see or read the comments from Francis Ford Coppola and Martin Scorsese this past week with regards to the superhero films.
Yes, a bit of a dig at Marvel.
So Scorsese, he said that they're not cinema. He said they're basically theme park rides. And I kind of see where he's coming from. They're, you know, blockbuster cinema is very different to the kind of gritty stuff he does. So for all that I disagree with him, I kind of get where he's coming from.
Yeah.
But then Francis Ford Coppola came out and he said that superhero films are despicable.
Yeah, you pretty much said death to Marvel.
It's a bit much, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I'm with Gemma. What you're saying there, Gemma, is, you know, the multiplexes are taken up by sequels and unimaginative things, comic book properties and so on, and we do need to support local cinema, we need to support independent film. That's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. But I think going as far as Ford Coppola is to say that these films are despicable...
It's too much.
To me, that's just an old man shouting at clouds again. It's, you know, he's just feeling irrelevant.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody can connect to the big screen where they're seeing, you know, empowerment of, you know, kids becoming heroes and, you know, women too, and just the ordinary guy being something extraordinary. You know, sit down, love. Just sit down.
They're being too arty-farty about it. Yes. They're saying things like, oh, you know, cinema needs to reveal something about the human condition. Yeah, maybe. Or it can just be really fucking fun.
Yeah.
It can just tell a fun fucking story for 90 minutes, which is what Marvel does three times a year.
Mm-hmm.
And what's
most
bad about that?
The most successful film ever is Marvel. And it's a nice release when you're in a shitty job or you had a shit time. Go to the cinema, switch your brain off, and just enjoy some fucking fun.
Yeah. Exactly.
So my recommendation, The Farewell?
My recommendation is avoid listening to those knobheads. What have they done?
But honestly, The Farewell is definitely worth your time. It's great.
I will check it out when it appears on my TV at some point.
Good for you.
Thanks. Mark?
I've got a podcast.
Ooh.
It's called Carry the Fire Podcast, and it's hosted by Dustin from Fryce.
Lovely.
Oh, lovely.
So he's brought out his own podcast, and it's a one-on-one interview, but what's really good is he's done quite a big summary. He wants to get big people on there, not like huge names, but people that will talk about religion, their beliefs, people's backgrounds, and answer those big questions you have in life. So sometimes, because obviously he's quite a religious guy, he's a priest, he does all this, I was expecting it to be loads of God talk, but it's not. His first host was a singer of a band called Samir Gadia, who's from the band Young the Giant, and those two are just great together. They're talking about touring and history of bands and stuff. I was like, okay, this is quite cool. The next guy I had on was called Brian McDonald, who is a storyteller, so obviously you just want to listen to people telling stories. And his most recent episode is with Kasim Rashid, who's a political candidate. Now, for me, I would never listen to anything on politics. I know nothing about it. But to hear how much of a struggle he has, how underpaid he is, he's on 18 grand a year as a candidate in the political world. He's on no money. He has to rely on sponsors and everything. It opens my mind up. So I'm listening to these conversations. They're really engaging. But because he knows he's famous for being in Fryce, if you're one of his Patreons, he will do you a audio of a breakdown of each song. So what he does, he talks about why he wrote it, what lyrics came into mind. So when I love his most recent album, Beyond the Pines on there, is fucking a great song. His first episode he's put out on Spotify is a breakdown for 45 minutes about how every line ties to this, what his thoughts were, how he actually watched Beyond the Pines, the Place Beyond the Pines.
Yeah.
How he loved the concept of the story, how he liked the twists in it, even the artwork, everything that came to mind. And as a nerd who loves music, to have one of your favourite bands, the singer talk about how why he wrote it, and this consistent and this continuously coming out every week is brilliant.
That sounds great. And on that tack, do you ever use the website Genius?
Is that for the lyrics?
Yeah,
it is.
And it
gives
the meaning.
Yeah, exactly. So it's that. So you'll get to read the lyrics of a song you love, and then it will have links to what those things mean. And they can be, you know, fan submitted.
Yeah.
It can be people who put in their own interpretations. Fuck that. But sometimes people will have found quotes from the writers of the songs explaining what they mean. And I love that.
Yeah.
Because I remember back in the day when I was in my teens and I used to read Metal Hammer and Kerrang, every now and again you'd get an artist interview in there discussing, you know, a breakdown of every song. And I always used to love that.
It's great.
So that is cool. I like that he's doing that for the Patreon.
It's really good and it's well produced. And what he'll do as well is he'll put secret stuff out there, loads of videos, all this sort of stuff, tour footage. But as Fryce are right now in their absolute element, one of their best albums they've done, they're just about to go on tour with and go and see them. I just think it's just a dream for me, you know. Imagine someone like Rob Zombie doing it. You'd be fucking loving life. And to hear the background, it's quite good because you sing these songs and you listen in, and while you're driving you sing along, you don't realise actually what actually inspired it. And in your head you've got an idea, oh, it's about him escaping and going to these woods and all this. It's not. It's about fucking getting away from the light of the fucking politics in the world and all this. And I'm like, this is brilliant. But his next guest is Gerard Way.
My Chemical Romance.
So I can't wait for that, because they're not going to talk about fucking music and My Chemical Romance, because he's not doing it. He'll be talking about writing comics, all this sort of stuff.
Umbrella Academy.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. So
how many episodes are there at the moment?
Four.
Okay, so has he done all songs from the album Palm?
No, he's only done one from the Lyric Breakdown and the four are guests. So one. So yeah, it's fucking great. So it's the first podcast I've actually paid for via Patreon, and you get lots of stuff. You get lyric sheets, you get a pin badge, all this sort of stuff. So
that's really great.
It's really fucking good.
Sounds very cool.
It's kept my drive to work for 50 minutes each day perfectly fulfilled.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And I'm going to finish it off with a TV show just to round it up, so we've got a little bit of everything.
That's good,
to
nice. Yeah.
I'm going with season 2 of Succession.
Now, I just started watching Succession.
Gemma, you are in for a treat. Have you just started season 1 or season 2?
Season 1. All right, okay. I'm on episode 5.
I will be circumspect then. I won't say anything too spoilery.
Yay.
But this show, you may remember last year, I picked it as a recommendation last year, and it also ended up, I think, being my number one show
it
of
was,
the year last
yeah.
year. So it's the story of the Roys, just to give you a roundup. And the Roys are a fictional family of media moguls based loosely on the likes of the Murdochs, but with a little touch of the Trumps thrown in. They're vain, petty, self-entitled assholes, but they're incredible to watch. It's a dark comedy drama, but this season, second season, leans a bit more towards the drama than the comedy, as it deals with the aftermath of the shocking events of the season 1 finale, which you have not yet seen, Gemma, so I will leave that with you. But this season, the Roys have to deal with a threat to their empire in the form of a hostile takeover bid, whilst also dealing with the ongoing family drama, as Roy family patriarch Logan, played by the great Brian Cox, has to decide who will succeed him as the head of the business. And as with last season, I'm going to say the same things as I did then. The standout performances are Kieran Culkin as Roman. He's the youngest of the Roy children. He's an absolutely hilarious dirtbag.
Do you know what he reminds me of? Joaquin Phoenix in Gladiator.
Yeah.
That kind of snidey, snivelly kind of character.
Nice. The slimy, self-entitled
son. Yeah, little shit.
Yeah, exactly. He's very like that. And then the other standout for me is Matthew McFadyen, who's their punching bag son-in-law, Tom.
Oh.
He's an amusing buffoon in season 1, and he still is in season 2, but he gets to show some vulnerability as well, which is nice. And Sarah Snook plays his wife. She plays a character called Shiv. She's the oldest, the only Roy daughter. And she previously in season 1 is outside of the business. That's season 2, she gets dragged in to the business, and she's incredible. It's the sharpest written show on TV. I say that, and I will fight anyone who disagrees. It comes from Jesse Armstrong, mm-hmm. who is a British writer, best known as being the co-creator of Peep Show.
Oh, right. Okay, cool.
And if you like shows like The Thick of It or Veep, you would like Succession, because Armstrong has written for both of those shows.
Nice.
So it's in that same sort of vein. Season 2 is not long finished on HBO in the US, on Sky Atlantic here in the UK. And the season finale of season 2 was even better and more shocking than season finale.
Wow.
The finale of season 1. It's incredible, engrossing television. And it's one of those things where I purposefully didn't watch them weekly on Sky Atlantic. I waited to let them build up on my DVR and then binge them in one go.
Cool.
Because it's the sort of show where you can't just watch it for an hour. After you watch it for an hour, you just jones in for the next hour. So it's best to wait and just binge the whole thing.
I love the theme tune too.
It's
so
brilliant.
Fucking cool.
Yeah.
It's really kind of like hip-hop, kind of classical, upper crust kind of Manhattan wasps.
And loads of people have been doing remixes of it as well, haven't they?
Yeah. It's really, really great. And yeah, you're right, Kieran Culkin. If you want to watch it for one person only, he's such a dick.
He's brilliant. How far are you into season 1?
Okay, so I'm on episode 5, so mm-hmm. we've already had the big party where one of the kids, or one of the elder kids, kind of loses their shits trying to set their authority. Greg is kind of like a little bit of a whipping boy.
Cousin Greg.
Cousin Greg, a total whipping boy for Tom too. I love Tom because he kind of reminds me of what Armie Hammer could be. Because he's quite dashing, he's quite handsome, but he's also really just a bit of a whipping boy himself, really,
isn't
he?
Well, that's it, because Tom is an absolute whipping boy because he married into the Roys. He's not a Roy by birth, so he has no control, no power.
Oh, yeah.
The only time he has power is when he's bossing around Cousin Greg.
Because
he's the only person who's less important than him, even though Greg is related by blood.
Also, one of the worst wedding proposals I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
But Sarah Snook, who plays Shiv, I really like her because I think I ranted on about a great film in the mystery top three.
Predestination.
And I was thinking, like, why isn't she in a vehicle? Because she's wonderful. And I'm glad to see her in Succession.
You'll love her in season 2. She's even better in season 2.
I cannot wait. I literally only just started this about a week ago, and I'm addicted already. It's so cool.
I think you'd dig it, Mark, because it's really cool, really compelling, darkly funny, great acting, great show.
Plus, I love Kieran.
Kieran Culkin rules.
Mm-hmm.
Can I watch it on Sky Atlantic?
You can.
You can indeed.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to know what came through from social media?
Yeah.
on Facebook, Sawton said, Knives Out, the new movie by Rian Johnson.
Oh, nice.
A thoroughly entertaining whodunit with a stellar cast, which blew the roof off London Film Festival.
I really want to see this.
As do I. Sadly, it falls in between episodes for us, so we're not going to be reviewing it, but I might go and see it anyway.
Yeah.
We might bring it as trip. Might bring it as a recommendation.
On Twitter, Captain Skunkbeard, at Captain_Skunkbeard, has said, Saw the Shark is Broken at Edinburgh Fringe a few weeks back. Outstanding. Mark, you know what the Shark is Broken is, don't you?
I do. It's the son of Mr. Quint himself doing a stage play, and it's done very, very well.
That's correct. Yeah, so it's a play based on the cast and crew of Jaws Killing Time during delays filming it. And it, as you say, it stars Ian Shaw, the son of the great Robert Shaw, who co-wrote and stars in it.
If I was to want to listen to an interview of somebody interviewing Ian Shaw, where would I go to, Mark?
Has an interview exclusively with him, all about the making of.
Thank
and
you.
And life under his dad, who was an alcoholic. So, very
subscribed.
Deep.
Check that out. On Facebook, Jack Turner has said, The Good Place Season 4 is off to a forking great start.
Agreed.
It is indeed. It's hilarious. Have you been watching it, Mark?
No, because it's one episode a week.
Yeah.
It is, I can't be doing that.
You're going to wait till they're finished and then binge it.
Latest episode, a bit of lump in the throat moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. It's the right time to end it.
I was going
to
say, is this the final one?
It is. Yeah. This is the end. This is the real season.
On Instagram, Ben, aka Suavis91, has said, I'd like to recommend the Attitude Era podcast, where three pals go back and rewatch every pay-per-view from the WWF Attitude Era.
That was the first time.
I'm not interested. The only wrestling podcast I want to listen to
Where can we listen to that?
I Got Five.
I Need Five.
Yes.
Brilliant. Well done. Cheers. Thanks. Yes. Fucking mug. I Got Five on it.
I Need Five, I'd check out. If I want to know wrestling, especially pay-per-views and how like all the other companies are doing, not just WWE.
You're right. I would go to ine5.co.uk to get involved in that. But I would also listen to the Attitude Era podcast. It's one of the best and fairly long-running now wrestling podcasts out there. It's incredible. Very popular. Deservedly so. On Facebook, Mike Lord has said, The Day Shall Come, the new film from Chris Morris, is a wickedly funny satire based on fact with great performances from Anna Kendrick, Kay Van Novak, and especially Marchant Davis. Easily one of the best films of the year.
It's going to be on my hit list.
Have you not? You've not seen
not
it yet?
Seen it
have
yet.
You seen it yet,
Scott
Mark?
Plus One Higgins saw it. He told me at the weekend. And when he went, Chris Morris did a Q&A.
Amazing. I have seen it. Sadly, when I saw it, Chris Morris didn't do a Q&A. I liked it. I didn't love it.
Right.
It's kind of ploughing the same field as Four Lions, but not as good.
No.
Four Lions rules.
Yeah. So I think if I see it again, maybe I'll like it more, but it didn't kick
not
my
great.
Ass as much as I hoped it would. But yeah, it's okay. On Twitter, Arthur Fleck, Joker himself, at Martin Coleman 3. If you can track it down, you have to watch Godfather of Harlem. It really is incredible with a kick-ass soundtrack too. Have you guys heard of Godfather of Harlem?
No,
I haven't.
It's a new TV series. It's not on in the UK yet. It's about the life of 60s crime boss Bumpy Johnson. It's a true story, and it stars Forest Whitaker. And it's meant to be very, very good.
Oh, nice.
The things I've read so far say it's great. So when that comes to the UK, I will certainly watch that.
Yeah, sure.
On Facebook, Thomas Holt has said, Angel Olsen's All Mirrors, my album of the year so far. Are either of you familiar with Angel Olsen?
I've not heard any of it.
Neither am I, but thank you, Thomas, for that suggestion. Marco Vazzani, a.k.a. Okram_V on Instagram. A couple of episodes ago, you were saying you liked Monkey Island-style games. We did.
We do.
In 2017, a game called Thimbleweed Park was released. It was created by two of the main guys who wrote Monkey Island. It's hilarious, fun, and as great as those old classic adventures.
Sold.
Aww. Yeah, well, I looked it up. You can buy it on the Switch for £15.
Ah, cha-ching. Perfect. Yeah. That sounds awesome.
Doing that. Facebook, Ben Bowman has said, The Boys. And I'm thinking, The Boys, haven't we covered that? But
yeah.
No, it's not that. He said, The Boys is a fantastic documentary about the Sherman Brothers, the musical geniuses behind Mary Poppins, The Jungle Book, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, and more. It's a fascinating look at the rocky relationship of two relatively unknown men who shaped our childhoods.
Wow.
Not my cup of tea, that, but I imagine.
I would want to watch
it. I can imagine that appeals to Gemma. Yeah. Wicked.
Get it in my eyes.
And finally, on Twitter, Lee Johnson, at Lethal Juice, has said, a podcast called Striped, The Story of the White Stripes. It's an official podcast from White Stripes, and it has interviews with virtually everybody who was around when the Detroit Sound kicked off. Essential listening if you're a fan. Now, Pooch, you're a huge White Stripes fan, aren't you?
I'm a huge White Stripes fan.
Have you got involved in this yet?
Not yet, but I'm going to on the way home. Mm-hmm. That sounds awesome.
I know that they're talking about we're only allowed one recommendation, but has anyone listened to the Office Girls podcast
yet?
Yes,
I have.
No, there's one episode out.
The first episode has just come out last week for the pilot.
Oh, that's amazing.
Unbelievable. They talk all of one episode per episode, so they can do 200.
Yeah. That's incredible.
I know. You get an hour on each one. Yeah. They talk about, they're going to get guests on. They reckon Dwight's going to come on, and Cousin Moe's and everyone.
Creed.
They're going to get them all on. And the music for the intro and outro is Creed. He does it. It's fucking great.
Already, I can't wait for the episode where they talk about Michael burning his foot on the George Foreman grill.
Yeah.
Or the dinner party.
Oh shit.
Yes.
Or the deposition when they bring his diary into evidence.
Or just cutting the face off the mask for the resuscitation. Yeah. It'd be amazing.
Yeah. But it made me do something that I've not done for a very long time. Watch the pilot episode.
Yeah.
Because it's
Which isn't great, to
it's
be fair.
Not. But, I mean, the little tidbits that they reveal during the podcast episode is fascinating. You're like, bloody hell!
Are they really going to do every an episode for every
they
episode?
Are.
That's unreal. How many are they doing a week? One a week?
Must be. So it's about 5 years.
That's 4 years. Four, 5 years.
So,
it's
worth it.
Amazing. I mean,
but it is. It's wonderful, and I've chuffing love it.
Count me the fuck in. If you would like to send us your recommendations, please do on Twitter at STTE Podcast or facebook.com/skiptotheendpodcast, Instagram at skiptotheendpodcast, or old school email, like Mark said, keep email alive, podcast@skiptotheend.co.uk. But we will only accept emails from AOL email addresses.
Yeah, none others.
Or if you don't know how to email us, go on Ask Jeeves.
So that brings us to the end of another episode of the Skip to the End podcast. Back to normal. Normal service resumed.
Indeed.
Slipping back into Gemma's old dirty, holy skidmark pants.
It's a reason why they're still here, boys.
Nice. We've got a big episode coming up next time. Really big.
Got a lot of stuff coming up.
Hell of a lot.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
It's quite hard to think on the spot. It's really. I'm tired. I'm not going to lie.
Mark, what's our next rewatch? Surely you remember that.
Yes,
you picked it.
It's Fight Club.
It is.
I still can't believe it. 131 episodes down and we never have done Fight Club.
I would have thought we did it on like episode 3.
I know. Mental. We might have. I don't know. Sorry.
You probably should have checked.
Rewatch. No, we haven't, and I can't wait. It's going to be psyched. We're going to get fucking. We're going to grow some tits. Be like Meatloaf.
Yep, way ahead of you, lads. Tits.
Yeah. And we're going to have some fun.
I don't know. I think Mark's nearly reached you, Gemma. Look at that. Gemma, what's our topic?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. We're going to do our top 3 satirical movies. So it should be quite a good and interesting one to
I have to go
about.
Home tonight and Google that and see what
it
means.
What does satirical mean?
Like, can I use Jaws? No?
And you?
No,
I don't
think so. It'll be all right.
Our main review next time round is Doctor Sleep. Let's hope that it does not in fact put us to sleep.
Yeah.
I'm very apprehensive.
You should be buzzing.
I know, but come on, The Shining is one of the greatest films of all time. I'm going to see that at the big screen on Wednesday.
Look what happened with Ben and Blade Runner. Blade Runner 2049.
True.
Yeah, but Denis Villeneuve was directing that. I don't even know who's directing Doctor Sleep.
No, I don't know,
actually. It ain't Kubrick.
No.
Because remember, he did that 2 out of 10 film, 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Exactly. Wank.
It's not for Mark, that one, generally.
No,
so I've heard.
Not,
despite the 10 out of 10.
Not a masterpiece.
Yeah, forget that. We'll be bringing you a brand new game show, which I've definitely come up with.
Yes.
I've told these guys.
Lovely.
Yeah. Sounds great as well.
We'll reveal it live on air what that is. We're going to have a lot of prizes to give away, as we always do, Mark.
Who are you masturbating over?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Oh, I'm glad you asked. It's Darren Aronofsky.
Darren Aronofsky.
That's a big one.
Mm-hmm. He's not done that many films, but he's done some goddamn great films.
Oh,
and
yeah.
some shite.
And some shite.
Well, yeah.
And I wonder which direction we'll go in.
Well, whatever Mark picks in like 6 weeks, he'll reverse course and say it's the worst film he's ever seen anyway,
bollocks,
so it doesn't matter.
It's rubbish.
That's going to hurt, like, literally stick with me now for months, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it is wank. But yeah, 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10 can be boring.
But I remember, what was the last Christopher Nolan one?
Dunkirk.
I remember Mark gave Dunkirk 10 out of 10, I think. And then about a week later in his car, he said to me, it's shit, innit?
And it never made my top 5 of the year. Yeah.
And it was a really emotional review. You got your dad on.
Yeah well,
like,
things that can sometimes go downhill. That's the moral of this episode.
Moral of your life.
Yes, so there we go.
Fucking hell, let's wrap this up. See you in 2 weeks. Yes, you'll be